Straight up 1 o'clock, meeting called to order. Did anyone sign up for public comment? But you know it's. I know Sue and Melana, and I wonder if they know that it's here. I know Linda does and Sue does.
When I see Melana, I told her it was here.
Sure, she was going to be here.
Okay. I told her it was going to be here when I met her last
week. Maybe comment until the public gets here. Can we do that?
You are the chair. You can meet the public.
No, I'm asking the board here. Is that okay if we delay? Because I do know we have a couple of residents that would like to speak today. Mm-hmm. I'm just surprised they're not here.
Me too.
Hey, Miss Chase
John.
Aw, you're harsh, bud. Okay, so we'll just defer that to later in the agenda.
That's fine. We can move some stuff around. Whatever you want to do, Barbara.
Yeah. Everybody had a chance to look at the agenda. Any additions?
In the minutes?
We do not have the minutes from last time. We have our new secretary, so...
Almost done.
So why don't we take a minute and just go around the table and introduce ourselves real quickly. Sorry.
What's
just giving some guidance.
What's your name?
Oh, you want to start with me. Okay. Barbara Anderson.
Going this way,
looking straight at you, buddy boy.
Bud Van Cleve, Byron.
That's right.
Thank you for the inspiration.
He expects a butt from each of us on the way out the door.
Right.
I'm Marcia King, at least.
Candace Curtis.
Craig Foster.
Jennifer Allen, Vancouver Public Schools. Thank you for the treats and things.
Sure.
Delicious.
Bill Bierke, Parks Manager.
Leanne Mattis, Parks Office Assistant.
John Spencer.
Adam Abuka.
Secretary.
Woo!
Gotta make sure.
And thank you, Leanne, for the name.
Yeah. Well,
the name is so much easier.
We said we need them on both sides.
I told her we need some.
I'm thinking if you're sitting beside someone you don't know.
And our guest.
That's true.
Yeah.
Starting over here.
Jeremy, Clark County Parks.
Welcome, Jerry. Welcome, Steve.
Steve's going to give us a presentation today on the counters.
And I'm Karen Llewellyn, Clark County Parks, volunteer coordinator.
Still need a first carriage out. Super. Next on the line is to review or adopt minutes. How do we want to handle the fact that we are late this time with minutes? It's Adam's first time, and he was not quite. We didn't get the communication flowing to get it out. Can we defer those minutes to next meeting?
Granted.
Or would you like him to read what he's got? That seems like a waste of time.
Defer it to next meeting.
Defer it once is good.
Okay, we will defer.
Because then we can approve them as distributed. We don't have to go through them every time.
That exactly. Yeah, so we will defer to next meeting. Well, the next thing is we have an objective of identifying a mission statement for this organization, for us. And Leanne distributed a number of example mission statements to use as a guideline and also asked if you would... maybe bring your little examples or suggestions with you today. Did anybody bring with them a suggested mission statement?
I brought along the Vancouver, the old mission statement, if you will.
Okay.
And made some comments to it.
Is that part of the handouts that...
Yes, that's what you got from me.
This one right here. The color one.
Number two. Yes.
And that would be that Vancouver Parks and Recreation will help build a healthy community, protect the natural environment, and support a healthy quality of life for all residents.
Do we all have that?
I should ask. These out here is Kelly and my suggestion to be considered as well. We did kind of push around with it a little bit. And then it looks like we've got a whiteboard here.
Yes, we do.
Who wants to maybe do the mission as people suggested up there?
Okay.
Do you mind?
No, you're fine.
Great.
So we'll
give everybody just a minute to take a look at the Vancouver one. And then the other two.
I have a clarification. A question for clarification.
What page is this,
are we looking to do the mission statement for Clark County's Parks and Recreation Department? Are we looking to do the mission statement for our board?
For PAC. It is for us.
I need to be real clear.
And this will be good practice for next Wednesday when we're doing it for the Comprehensive Parks Plan.
Yes,
so
exactly.
That's going to be the 4.5 hours.
That's a bigger scope.
Yes.
This will be a warmer
effort. We'll meet one.
So we'll just open it up and ask for how do we want to start it out. It should be, I think that there were some really excellent points made in the other handout you gave, Leanne.
I'm
digging for it right now.
That's not it.
I didn't print this.
Okay, the one from Maine. And the part that I found was where it said back here, developing a mission statement. How your group reaches this shared vision. A mission statement could tell us this. The statement becomes a tool to communicate the group's purpose to others. A mission statement will tell people what you do, for whom you do it, and how you get it done. The mission statement sets the group's direction, is clear and concise, is realistic, we hope, reflects the values and beliefs of the group, demonstrates a commitment to serving others, is inspirational, and is action-oriented. I thought that those were really good guidelines to try to hold in mind.
I don't think you did that. You did that with yours.
Maybe a good starting point then is list each one of those key values there that you just said, and then we could each of us talk about what those key values are. So if you put, you know, what's inspirational, we could put a list of what's inspirational, and then, you know what I mean? So maybe that would be a good part. And then if we take what's important to each person, then we can put it all into a paragraph.
Sure.
If that works. Because those are good key points to at least get us started.
So you
got the, and are you talking about this?
Yeah, these were the key points right there.
Hi, Gail.
So what's the first one, Adam, since you've got the list?
I think she did a pretty good job with hers. I think yours is excellent.
Thanks. I was afraid it was a bit verbal.
No. Just the opposite.
I stole the ending from Kelly.
Yeah, it's okay.
But my primary focus, I guess on mine, the reason that I changed from Kelly's is that I really see this because even before I was on this board,
we only have the one.
I saw this board as a place I came when I wanted to say, where's my park?
Yeah.
You know, come on. I thought that this was the vehicle to really get communication up the ranks.
Yeah, I agree.
One thing I think you have to be careful about doing a mission statement too is the keywords you use.
How about if
they can interpret it in so many different ways?
Put it on the screen.
That's always a problem.
And that is a problem. So I think I would suggest when we go ahead. I don't want to interrupt you. When we do this, I would suggest we come up with a paragraph and sit on it for a month, or at least a certain amount of time to review the words that are used and when we are really comfortable with it before we would actually incorporate it. It just gives you time to, when you make up a statement, and just okay, that's it, and stamp it. Sometimes you look back at it later and you go, gosh, that really wasn't the right word.
I usually use mull time. That's what I call it, is mull time. Yeah. But I would like to leave today with
I'm saying put it together. I agree.
So maybe going through looking at Kelly's, with input from the community, provide the BOCC the best possible advice regarding present and future comprehensive parks and recreation facilities, systems, and services. All advice from the CCPRAB will strive to include best practices, serve all citizens, be economically responsible, and environmentally sustainable.
So,
and then if you take a look at the second suggested one that got tossed out, not that we're locked into these, but they give you a starting point. The mission of the CCPRAB is to provide a forum to communicate between the citizens and county officials in the stewardship and conservation of Clark County's natural recreation, recreational and cultural resources. CCPRAB will provide advisory support to the Parks and Recreation staff and BOCC, reflecting citizens' values, includes best practices, serves all citizens, be economically responsible, and environmentally sustainable.
So using University of Maine's format, what you've got here, at least with these two statements, is three things that we're doing that are identified here. One is providing advice. Second is providing a forum for community. And a third is to be a communication conduit to the board. Which sounds
pretty much covers it, I think.
Yeah, I guess the question is there anything else we do that we should hit on first?
That's an excellent point. Yes, something to add.
And I got nothing there.
Oh, good suggestion. Now maybe we can take a second to
just
think.
Yeah, just to think. So maybe follow the system, think through each point.
Do you cover the whole thing?
See any other?
I rewrote it a little. I liked Kelly's. That would be my suggestion. So it's very, just a little bit different, but hitting the key element components, I think that's, just, it might do that.
I missed the part about staff.
Yeah, because I have staff meeting at the end there.
Yeah,
okay.
Definitely.
I'm just assuming that we're not going to go right to BOCC, that we will always go through staff, so we should be clear. Yeah,
I think it gets to be clear. The reason I changed it a little bit from Kelly's is that I really see the primary function that I've always came to either Florence or Kelly or Roy for was always from the neighborhood side, us driving park needs, that truly we are, our value that we bring to both staff and the BOCC is that we represent the voice of the citizens. And so to me, that was why that became utmost. But you're a better wordsmith than me,
girl. No. I'm trying to share
that thought with you and why that was first and foremost on mine. Because to me, I see that as being the genesis.
I do like your, to provide the forum to communicate between. But maybe even to provide the forum and request or and...
She says between citizens and county officials in the stewardship and conservation. I think that's really important.
Yeah, I agree.
So advisory support to parks and recreation staff.
We are advising the staff and the board separately or together, however you want to look at that. We're acting as a forum for the citizens, pretty much. And we're a communication conduit for the citizens.
Yes.
I'm not sure whether I believe so, but it's worth bringing up. Are we also a forum for businesses or other interests? Are we a communication conduit for other interests, such as, you know, the environment or anything like that?
Oh, we're absolutely stewards of the environment. I think that's why every one of us are here. If that's what you're saying.
You're talking about the groups, like environmental groups, type
of thing. Yeah, and to me, the citizens is all-encompassing. You know, whether it be a school or a business, I mean,
but I think the point he's making is that we need to make sure that it's understood that to businesses or to environmental groups or whatever, that we are
open
at their service, open to their input also.
And
they are part of the community, though, with input from the community.
Yeah. Well, yeah, you could use the word, instead of citizens, use the word community.
Yeah. Well, up there it says community, maybe later it says citizens.
Yeah,
the very first sentence.
Something Barbara just said, I don't know if anybody else caught, was that we're also stewards. So that's adding a fourth item to our to-do list.
Absolutely.
So it's now advice, forum, communication, and stewardship.
Mm-hmm. Say that again. Give me those four again.
Advice, forum, communication, which you could potentially combine those two, and stewardship.
Suggestion on how to integrate that into the mission statement?
I haven't gotten that far yet.
I think this is something that's going to be living, if you will, and we're going to have to live with it. I think that your suggestion to take some time with this is really important. And I would prefer to do that. I'm not comfortable just jumping in and saying, okay, we've got to come up with something.
Well, but that's why we got the samples at the last meeting. And we're asked to bring our suggestions to today's meeting.
Well, yeah, what she's saying, and I agree too, is that we do what we come up with our best.
Yeah, what we come up with today, I absolutely agree. We need mull time on
it.
But I do think we need to try to charge forward today and come up with something that we are mulling and come back with, you know, some improvements for it.
Yeah, we can always kick off the Wednesday's meeting by finishing this up, too. You know, if we get something that's pretty solid, that's close, and then come back and wrap it up.
Is this the four, or do we think that we also, do we advocate, or?
That's part of communication.
Okay.
I would at least agree that would
okay.
be.
Okay, good.
Continuing down the line of University of Maine's format, the question then is, what do we do, or how do we do it, actually? And my answer to that for all four items is we listen and we communicate. I don't know, is there anything else we need to say as far as how we're doing things?
I'm not sure that includes the stewardship portion of it.
Yeah, but I think
you're looking for the action.
I think the stewardship comes in where we say that we are being economically responsible and environmentally sustainable.
Actually, the other thing you could, whoever brought up the word advocacy, we listen, communicate, and advocate. And that I think heads more towards stewardship, perhaps.
Yeah, I think so too.
It covers what you're trying to say is we'll strive to communicate best practices. That serves a purpose, doesn't it?
No.
My problem is that always brings to my mind who's best practices? Who decides what's best practices?
Well, there's usually some national standards.
But you know what I'm saying? Onward.
I know Roy could pull it out just like that. What's the name of that guy that wrote the book?
Should we start at, like, how should we start it? And since we know that some of these are some of our core values and pieces, but if we...
Go ahead, sorry.
That's okay. No.
Well, I was just going to say, so with what we've just said, we We provide advice, we provide a forum and communication. We do that for staff, board, community, and the environment. And we listen, communicate, and advocate. Is all that in the two sentences that's there? And if so, we're well on our way. If not, how do we add it in?
Well, I looked a couple of other ones up online if you'd like me to toss them out.
And one suggestion I would have it as the, I think, yeah, we're well on our way there, with input and collaboration from the community. Because it's not just about the input, it's really about collaboration with people. We don't want people just to dump on us and we have to bring it in. Yeah. It's like, how can we collaborate with neighbor associations, with neighbors, with sports and folks? So if we added... within the first sentence, with input and collaboration.
Input from and collaboration with.
Okay.
Input from?
Yeah.
Input and collaboration with.
From.
And collaboration.
Is this
with?
And
from. Yeah,
we're making it too hard.
So.
Input from.
And.
And the word
from.
We're going to put from and.
Yeah, it's killed.
Jennifer's got a chance.
Okay. See, I liked yours because you actually talked about stewardship and conservation.
Could I suggest a few things?
Sure.
Please do.
Something along the line of preserving, enhancing, and protecting what we already got.
That's nice.
Can't hear you.
Oh, sorry.
I'm sorry. Whatever. No. You need to close the windows that go to the road.
So I mentioned something along the line of preserving, enhancing, and protecting what we already have. So preserving it, enhancing it, and protecting it, as well as promote public awareness. If that's...
I like that.
You lost me somewhere in there. The first one?
Yeah, so Greg was just saying, just tell me what you're saying. Well, I now get it.
Yeah, and if you read this, I like what we're doing here as I read through this. By being economically responsible and environmentally sustainable. Well, the word sustainable, I don't see how that fits into the sentence. Well, I can see environmentally sensitive or something on that. But
because we as a group,
are not being sustainable. We're promoting sustainability.
Yes.
So we need to change that.
Well, actually, change it to by being economically responsible and promoting
environmental
sustainability. Yeah, thanks for that. Yeah.
Well, here, Adam's getting his change post in there. This is nice having the overhead to work from.
Mm-hmm. So
works a lot better than the whiteboard.
And promoting.
Promoting.
No. We're worried about yours becoming the house.
I think what Adam suggested is fitting right in with your thought there.
Well, he's got the word preserve, enhance, and protect. Preservation would be the approach to sustainability, so that's actually there. Enhancing isn't really in here yet. All this.
The first sentence is so awkward to me. The community provide. I'm not sure he got that right. With input from the collaboration with the community. Oh, there you go. Thank you. Provide the... Okay, advice.
Provide staff and...
Yeah, provide staff.
Staff and commissioners.
Yeah.
Advice.
But what if we use the county officials? Would that work?
Yeah.
Actually, I like that.
Now, I want to point out that Kelly was very clear when he put the R in CCPRAD.
That's not what they call it at the county.
Okay. No, I want to
say... He told me, make sure that you... Because I called him on it. I said, well, you've got a typo. He said, no, well, it's not a typo, girl. He says, because you know your feeling, because I'm out there advocating. We are recreation. We are recreation, too.
And we discussed that at the first meeting as well.
But are we in a committee or are we a commission? I would like to know the answer to that.
They call us, we're a board now.
We're a board.
Board.
Okay, just one. Yeah. Sure.
B-O-R-E-D or...
Yeah. B-O-R.
So, yeah. The question... well, first... who was it? Candace, you said it a minute ago. Provide... not elected officials.
The advice to the county officials.
County officials.
Like county officials.
We don't have. Jennifer, can you have them change BOCC to county officials?
That now.
You hear me?
Why are you here for that one?
All right.
Yeah, county officials in the.
And then take out advice. Just put regarding.
Do you ever see that cartoon advice where they do the picture of a swing set and then they tell you how it's designed
to provide staff and county officials?
Something you have to provide to somebody.
Yeah. In the stewardship and conservation of Clark County's natural, I like the way that fits in there.
Recommendations
regarding has good alliteration. Let's go. So we don't have any advocacy in here. And I have to say I'm somewhat concerned about bringing that up. On the one hand, I'd like to say, yeah, we're here to advocate for the environments and for the community.
But we really aren't.
But at the same time, yeah, I'm not sure that's how... I don't think the board would necessarily agree with
didn't
me on
see
that,
that
one.
Way, I wouldn't think.
Oh, really? That's not...
Why do you feel that way? Because I see that as
are we advocates?
I really see us as primary advocates.
For?
In that communication.
That's what I would like to be. And if we're all in agreement,
well,
to
you
go
say
there, I think
but
we're
advocating for what?
When you advocate, it's you're advocating for the citizens. For example, the neighborhood brings to you an issue with the park.
So you're not talking about a particular...
The best practice that serves all the
And you work with them in helping to get their message up the lines of communication, help to guide them when they need to know where to go.
Okay. I guess my problem...
In that way, you're an advocate.
My problem with advocate comes across sometimes as being I'm advocating because I want a park in my neighborhood, or I'm advocating because I want more of something. You understand what I'm saying?
And sometimes that's the case. I was sure here plenty of times saying, where's my park?
Yeah. Though in our positions, you're right, we would be advocating for the system. And an individual of a park may be part of that advocacy if it's fitting the system.
Yeah, because you are that liaison. Because
I want a trash can at my park, so yes.
Well, we try to leave our personal issues at home. But we are that liaison in my mind. That is one of our primary functions. So I would not agree that that's not a key element.
So how do we get it in there, though? I'm looking for a way without making this thing ungainly. But I really do kind of want the word in there.
Everybody wants me to download their stuff. I'm like, I don't want that.
Could you, like in the beginning, put something like primary advocate with input from the collaboration with the community, provide staff, something like that?
Well, actually, we could say advocate to and provide staff with.
Well, because we don't want to start it with the with.
Aren't we, by communicating best practices, aren't we advocating?
I think communication is a much more passive, if you will, verb, and advocation is
active. When you advocate, you speak or write in favor of, support, or urge by having a new thing come.
The part, though,
and advocating to protect.
for our comp plan.
That's where your
mission statement.
Oh, I was just thinking, advocating in there. When we advocate, we're actually advocating to protect the park.
Because once we get this, then I should see what you
could actually say that this is committed to preserving, enhancing, and advocating to protect the park, park system. And the advocacy, I mean, the end product of the advocacy is that, whether it be that you're working with an individual or a neighborhood group, or when staff comes to us and wants us to do the reverse, which is to advocate to the citizens.
So, Jeremy,
so the direction of our advocacy goes both ways.
Changes.
So Jeremy, did you get that? That it would be the last sentence, the CCPAB, PRAB, we were talking about that before, is committed to preserving, enhancing, and advocating to protect.
To protect the Clark County Park System and advocating to protect
our, because the board officially is.
Yeah, we're getting into the advocacy mode here. We want the R in there.
We want the R in there.
We got to get the commission to sign off on
it. Somebody else can throw it out, but we want the R in there.
All right. R going in.
All right. So, Jennifer, you want to read that for us?
I can read it. It says, with input from and collaboration with the community, provide staff and county officials recommendations regarding present and future comprehensive parks and recreation facilities, systems, and services. CCPRAB will strive to communicate best practices that serve all citizens by being economically responsible and promoting environmental sustainability. The CCPRAB is committed to preserving, enhancing, and advocating to protect the Clark County Park System.
So two things, my English, I have issues with this. The first sentence, put will provide, and then a comma after enhancing, because it's a list.
And that first sentence bothers me. Could we make it active and to collaborate with somebody who needs to have input, could you just say collaborating with the community, comma, we will provide?
Yeah.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah, but there might come a time when you're not collaborating with the community, when you're butting heads with the community.
Oh, well.
Well, then we should be gone if we're not representing what the community wants.
No, part of the community.
Just start with the word collaborate. And I'm saying get rid of the, not that I want to get rid of input, but I think it's sort of
like that.
Yeah, I think that's. I think you have to have the input if you're collaborating.
Collaborating with the community.
Well, you got to.
We will.
CCPRAB will.
Yeah, we
will.
There you go.
Or we.
CCPRAB will.
Well, the first sentence it should have our name.
Yeah. And then everywhere else that we see that we have the CCPRAB, can we say we?
I like it.
Yeah, so Parks and Recreation Facilities.
We are committed to best practices.
We will strive to communicate best practices. And we are committed. Yeah, you got it.
Replace that.
Yeah, we.
And the other one is we are committed in the last sentence.
And I think that the one thing that I think needs to be be emphasized, though, you'll notice in Kelly's original one, the word all he had in quotes, and that was also intentional.
Yeah, why?
Because it meant to be inclusive, that key of addressing everybody's needs. And whether that's just assumed, but that's why you had the word all citizens, the all in quotes.
Well, we could say collaborating with all community.
Would it be rather not citizens, but wouldn't it be
a community?
Community,
yeah.
Because citizens
well,
is
citizens
like,
of the community.
Well,
and that's why you use the term though all citizens with all in quotes.
And that's why it's a problem is because.
Citizens
all citizens is like people
to ignore business.
And it's people from from a different state saying they want to say it. It's like it doesn't even affect them have anything. You know what I'm saying?
Sure.
So that it's
I like it
we're talking about a community
sure,
and what they want as opposed to what yeah. someone outside
this
of the country.
So then we need to get our advocacy of the disabled and such in here.
What do you mean? Oh, to this group? Or in the sentence? What are you talking about, Barbara?
Excuse me?
Are we missing something in the paragraph? Or you meant
no, I'm just wondering his intent to be inclusive.
What if we say
in our visions? Yeah. Needs to be in there.
What if we were to say the entire community? And that covers our
question. The word entire fixes it, I think.
I do too.
Yeah. That's a good
honor the intent of the, yeah.
Yeah, I think that's even better than the quote around all.
I like in collaboration, but instead of collaboration.
There you go.
Mm-hmm. In, so go back.
In collaboration with.
The beginning, sure.
Yeah.
Just the word in, there you go, collaboration.
And make that CCRAB provides staff, get rid of will and add an S. Keep it active and current.
So provide staff?
Yeah.
And county
officials.
You don't need an apostrophe after. Yeah. did you say we, though? You're talking.
I've got a problem with the beginning. I mean, I think we need to say CCP or PRAB, then sentence to
so
start
have,
it.
Have
yes,
the
you're right. See,
word.
Yeah. Start it with our name. CCPRAB in collaboration with the community.
Comma yeah. In collaboration.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah.
Now it's not so awkward.
Okay. Could spell
it out. Then would it be possible? Get rid of the comma after community yeah. now.
Would it be possible to say... Would it be possible to write out actually what CCPRAB
yes,
actually
it should
is?
Be it should be written out.
Well, that will be in the definitions usually.
Well, I mean,
no, it should be.
I know because and one of the things we reviewed today, I thought, who is that?
Well, for definition.
And I'll bring that up when we get to that document.
Right. First time you use it,
not the emphasis.
What are we doing on time? Give this the time it needs, but.
There you go.
How
you doing,
Vivian?
Great.
I need to move on.
Then you need to come at the community.
Madam Chairman, can I recommend
that we leave it here?
We were just doing a time check.
Yeah, let's hold on.
About 3 minutes.
In case some funky thing happens, we're
to be on task. Oh no, we need to go back and pick up our.
And you don't need one after work.
Yeah, oh, wait a second. I agree because we need to go back.
Yes, you want to have some time.
All right. Let's read this through one last time and then.
Can we get this?
Bring this and we'll maybe do our final thoughts on Wednesday.
Yes, we can start meeting off of that.
And.
Wednesday.
Jerry? Is it possible you can email that over to Adam?
Sure.
Jerry.
Oh, I wrote down Jerry. Sorry.
Then that'll be sent out to us? Or?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, Adam will get that out.
The meeting Wednesday is here.
Yes.
Yeah, before Wednesday.
Yes.
Before next Wednesday.
Thank you. See, I know the rest of the
Wednesday. Yeah.
Is it good, bad?
I had no idea.
So
it don't work
because we had
right.
Yeah. And then on Wednesday, when we get together Wednesday, this will be first thing to go back. So take time when you get it in your email to look at it, see how it settles with you, and then we can put the final okay on it at that meeting. Now's a good time to go back and pick up our community input. Because I see a number of people arrive at the new location a little late. Was there anyone who wanted to speak today from the public? Would you state your name?
My name is Gail Fryer, and I live across from one of the newer acquired parks on Northwest 389th Street, currently called Bratton.
Bratton Canyon.
Bratton Canyon.
Yes.
Anyway, so I've been a steward of the park for 24 years, so I when the DNR first owned it.
Thank you.
And so I'm the unofficial guardian of the park, and I'm just kind of a thorn in everybody's side. And anyway, so I'm really wanting to promote the renaming of the park.
How timely.
That's on our agenda today.
Yes.
Great, thank you. Anyone else? Oh, I thought you wanted to chat a lot. Sorry. Good. Well, we knocked that out quick. Then moving right along, unfinished business. Bill.
Okay. Is there anyone bring up the Stewart property?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Stewart property, Philana property.
Robert, can I ask a question first? You know what? Do we want to dive into what the intent of or the naming would be and all of the information from her now, or
no?
Or
from her?
Mm-hmm. Or is that part specifically on the agenda?
I think she is here because she wants to hear what the policy is.
It's actually B. It's right after this A. So.
Yeah, that's coming right up.
Okay. But I just didn't know if we were going to talk specifically about her park needs, which is what I thought. But if not, it's okay. I mean, or did you have a suggestion for your new park name, or did you have something that you wanted to bring to our attention?
I just would encourage that the board goes forward with renaming the park, because the way it was named before didn't have any public input. And it's really not an appropriate name for the park. So I'd just like to go through the public procedure for renaming it, make sure we get a different name.
Okay. Excellent. Thank you. I just wasn't clear.
Thank you. Those were left out of that. The interconnecting system of trails. That's one of the items that I mentioned.
All right.
Should we stay on that topic, or should we go to Stewart and go back to naming?
I'm good. Yeah, I'm good. I just wasn't sure. I knew she was here to talk about it, but I didn't know.
Right.
Did she want to change it?
And that's why I stayed a little silent when she finished talking.
Okay.
Did you want to expand?
I know. I missed my cue, Barbara. I'm sorry.
No, I appreciate you letting me elaborate a little bit.
We'll definitely talk about that.
Yeah.
Okay. Sounds good. All right. So with the Stewart acquisition, at our last FAB board meeting, we did talk about. Well, of course, the acquisition of the piece of property, but we also did talk about the possibility of incorporating a parking lot here. So since our last meeting, I've had a chance to talk to a lot about what the association thought about that. I've also talked to Terry Snyder with the Vancouver Park Parks, because he was very involved as well back at the time that this park was built. And at the time, when the park was built, that was a possibility. It was being looked into, but it was decided that that was not a very good idea. The road here is pretty narrow, and the neighborhood at the time around this area wanted a little neighborhood park, which is why there was originally a fence right here, and a kind of a division between the big community park component as well as the neighborhood park. This actually, in the original plan, was slated to have a playground to go in here as well. And so that did not go in phase one, but there's probably a plan for that to go in at some time in the future. And so that kind of pushes us back to the possibility of acquiring this piece here. And Jeremy got online, and because the question came up, how many people can we park, or how many cars can we park in this 6-acre parcel? And mm-hmm. The answer is, we should look to that next sheet, Jeremy. There's a parking schematic right here. And it shows kind of what this could look like as far as parking. And the number that came up, I can't quite read it, but
it's not on here.
It's in the neighborhood of about 83 stalls can go into that site.
83?
So that is very significant parking that we can add. And can actually see that?
We have a copy in our
handout. Oh, a copy. So here's all the different angles of parking, the 45-degree, 30-degree, and how many stalls you can fit into that particular space. So under that exact acreage.
Just so you don't make me parallel park, I'm fine.
Right. So is the 83, is that including the 5 handicapped?
Yes, I believe so.
So that isn't in addition. I wasn't sure how to read this.
The
bottom. Yeah,
this is
83
spaces.
Right here,
88
spaces.
And at the bottom it says
and
one handicap.
Well, no, that's one van.
One van.
One van, yeah. And four regular.
Right.
And there's nothing to say that we can't add a couple of extras. That shouldn't be a problem. If you have one of these, you get to two of as well. But with the 83, that to me is pretty significant parking, and that has been an ongoing problem because of the sports component out there at Goleta. So, and plus we do have $5 that we can need to expend, and I'm strongly leaning towards the acquisition of this property. Now, talking to Pam Mason, who's in Real Property Services, she's still negotiating with the folks on that property, and we actually do get a solid, amount locked in, then we can actually, take it to the board and ask permission to proceed for a purchase agreement. But we do have one of the siblings of the three are kind of digging their heels in, and it's the one that lives there. They're not too anxious to move off-site just yet, but the other two are really anxious to get it moved. And so I would imagine it could be another month or so before we do find out for sure, but Pam Mason is staying in touch with them at least once a week, and it sounds like we may get some movement there. So that's it in a nutshell. That's what I've learned since our last meeting, and so I still would strongly look forward to a recommendation to proceed with us from this board.
And I'd just like to add that I did go out there, and I have to say first, where was my mind? Because you're absolutely right, there was a fence there, and as Melotta and I walked through there, I even remembered that on 4th of July I leaned against the fence.
Oh.
It's just one of those things you see 100 times over and it doesn't register. But within it, I did also speak with her about, they already do have a very nice playground there, but they have a plan for that area to be developed.
Oh,
already the neighborhood does. They had done a memorial to...
there's also another area, plus that area could be utilized for ADA accessible playgrounds for kids in memory of all kids that visited there.
Thank you. I was stumbling for those right words, but I knew it's a specialized, focused, just celebration area for special needs. And I think that that's a great way for the neighborhood to use it. So,
but Bill,
looking at that.
But if you have not acquired the property yet, why are we even...
Well, he's looking for a recommendation from us today to proceed
to acquire the property.
To proceed with that acquisition. And so
we have already done.
Is there someone who would like to place a motion? They deferred it the last time because
we deferred it last time because we wanted to explore the north side of the property.
We deferred it last time because we wanted... And along that line... Melotta did walk me along that one trench area, and she's absolutely right. You would not want to make that into the play area over here. It is excellent for the parking. I love the way it will open it up so that when the police drive by, they've got plans already for the type of plantings to give great visibility in for safety. I think there's a lot of good things about this. But I'm glad we took the time to do some extra investigations.
So you're looking for recommend the purchase of the north side property?
Purchase of the Stewart property.
South side.
Yeah, south side property.
Yeah, they're north.
Yes.
Okay, so moved.
I didn't quite hear it. You were speaking that way.
Move to recommend the purchase of the Stewart property.
Second. I don't see any indication here for any ADA parking.
Yeah, there is three. There's five. There's four.
Back.
Four.
Here.
Oh.
Four standard and one van.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think that will be really important to have adequate or maybe over adequate. If there is a desire by the neighborhood to put in an inclusive play structure, some thought around how they might have parking and whether it's on street parking that's very close to the inclusive play or within the new parking lot, although that's some distance to get, but it also being a neighborhood park, so if there's just some consideration to make sure we have enough of those.
Do we want to amend the motion to include in this a recommendation to put in an additional two handicapped stalls.
Well, we're not at that point now.
Yeah. We haven't even, I mean, the design.
Not, I don't think we're even at that point.
No, that would not be part of this then.
Yeah, we're
but we want to hold on to that thought, Jennifer.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because you're absolutely right.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Okay, so we have a motion to recommend the purchase of the Stewart property. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Abstained? Motion carries.
Thank you very much for this. The Land and Newer Association was hoping to get a little bit more additional parking because every time we have special events, it's a problem to get into the annual parking as well as the overflow parking for others.
And thank you for your input, Mulata, when I came to you to, for the question. Okay, moving on back to Gail's comment regarding the park payment policy, and I believe all of you received this some time ago as far as the actual policy. I think we emailed it to you. And have you had a chance to read through the policy itself? And essentially what we did here is, and Gail came to us wanting to rename one of the parks that was originally, when we first got it from DNR, was a Woodland Campground, and because we're not really, we don't support camping components as of yet, overnight camping, we wanted to get rid of that name, and at the time, the then director decided to call it Bratton Canyon Park, because that's what the road is named on the way up there, but it's not exactly in that same area, and so Gail came to me some months ago asking if we could possibly go out to the public and have somewhat of a query for names, potential names for this site, so first steps first. One thing we had to do is adopt a policy. Mm-hmm. Well, Vancouver Clark Parks had a policy in place, and so what we did is we pulled that policy out and just basically modified it to the point where it points towards the county. So it's a kind of a standalone county policy. If I do get recommendation to from this board, I will then write up a staff report and then present it to the Board of County Commissioners.
I was wondering on this, who is the CCP manager? I went back and looked in the definition.
CCP? Park County Parks Manager?
Oh. That's too easy.
Sorry.
I'm Park County something.
I have a question. Is there anything in here that you can point me to that would talk about, for example, parks that are utilizing fundraising to put in baseball, backstops, fields, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. Sometimes we'll use naming rights for a field.
Yes.
It's not the renaming of a park, per
right.
se.
Yes.
Is there a paragraph in here that addresses that?
I believe there is something in here that actually addresses components within a park, you know, like a field or, you know, sponsorships, that kind of thing. But this actually kind of points directly at the name of parks.
Yeah.
But I guess I was wondering if the...
Greg?
Excuse me?
In 6.3, in fact, I had a question on that as well. Because in 6.3, it says that we, this organization, would be the ones that would have final review and approval or reject commemorative naming proposals for designated features or elements within a park or facility. And then in 6.4, it looks like we're left out of the naming of the trails and parks and open spaces. What was the logic on that? That only the DOC, I mean, wouldn't they look for a recommendation from us on that as well, where we'd have some input? Or maybe I read this wrong.
Shall have final.
So 6.3 and 6.4 is what I'm looking at.
Well, yeah, maybe I think the board actually makes the final decision.
Well, they always make the final decision on everything.
You're saying
so
upon recommendation.
Yeah.
Trails and open spaces
mm-hmm.
wouldn't come to this board by those.
Just the way it read, it looked like a
trail and open spaces seemed to only go to this. So maybe
it's like the last
being more
maybe going
inclusive
more
if
yes.
we're able to do that.
Maybe we can.
There's a reason not.
Right. I don't see a reason not to include that, so maybe we should just try to work
include
with 6.3 and 6.4.
What?
What's that?
What did you say?
I think what we can do is take 6.3 and expand it to include park trails and open space.
Okay.
But I'm concerned about the last sentence in 6.3.
Okay.
That shall have final review and approve, reject commemorative naming proposals for designated features or elements within a park or facility. I could just see that going past the commission, the county
commissioners. I mean, everybody
Well, they were both having a final.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think that needs to be switched up a little bit.
I mean, I think it would be fine, but I'm sure they wouldn't agree with it.
Right. Yeah. Well, I think the intent here, what we wanted to say is that, you know, the Parks Advisory Board shall make the recommendation and then the commission.
And you got that there.
So we'll work on that.
Yeah, okay. So that was the one part that really I had concern over.
Thank you.
Although I did have a question, just on the logic, because it didn't make much sense. Under 411, it says, only consider commemorative naming requests or proposals of individuals deceased for at least 5 years or greater from the individual's recorded death.
That's existing language. That's what it used to be.
The reason they did that was because the emotions went so high.
Yeah.
That they want to make sure people have some time.
I think that's a good consideration.
But we haven't followed the policy.
Yeah, I was going to say, because I think it's wonderful that Bud is sitting here.
Yes.
In a room named after him.
I know. I remember that.
That was a feature, though, not a park.
Well, it's still a feature.
I'm not saying I agree with it. I'm just saying that was...
This didn't say park. This just is, as far as commemorative naming.
Gotcha. Come on.
And so, you know, I mean, I think that's a good idea, but I don't know that...
You understand that.
Well, Luke Jensen...
I understand why.
What are your thoughts on that? Going forward.
My thoughts are is that
Luke Jensen.
It's situational.
He wasn't gone 5 years.
No.
Yeah. It's situational.
It kind
and
of.
And I don't think we should have a rule that says only.
Is 20 years, nobody will know.
It can be part of the consideration, you know, that you want to.
On a case by case
basis. On a case by case basis, you know. But I just. I think it's wonderful that Bud's here to enjoy the fact that he was honored.
Mm hmm.
Maybe it's trying to get at, so I'm trying to think of why. Maybe it's trying to get at, you know, when folks have passed, they have a legacy about them that is consistent and solid. When you're still moving and breathing, you could be the nicest guy on the planet and then embezzle all the money from the Parks Department or something, and then
well,
you've got to...
Yeah.
He's going to take all the dollars from it.
Yeah, right.
I don't know. I guess we might just rename it at that point, but then that could be a problem. Yeah. So, I mean, I'm just trying to think of why could that have ever come into play? I don't know.
But they have not ever followed it.
They never followed it. So,
Luke Jensen.
Does it make sense to actually keep this actual time frame in here,
or should
we just make it a little more? It didn't make any sense to me to have it in there.
The reason I would keep it there would be to give you an out in the instance where someone was trying to force a naming.
Yeah, but we you know, once we do something, we want to be fair and equitable. You know, be consistent in what we do for policy. And so we want to, when we write policy, we want to make sure that it makes sense.
I do like.
We don't write it to break the policy. So.
I don't like the only consider.
If you have a recommendation, that would
very restrictive.
Well, I think the situation needs to drive, and so anything that starts with the word "only" always raises a red flag to me.
I agree.
And that was why I looked at it, put a big question mark by it. I'm not. I don't understand why you would wait 5 years. Because to me, sometimes 2 years would be great.
Well, but again, going with that, why don't we just recommend that all references or all requirements for deceased, for people to be deceased, be removed, and just let it ride with whatever people feel is appropriate.
Well, in the future, if something comes up that you choose to name a parcel after someone, you'd have to go back and change everything.
All the records and stuff.
So why put it in there to start with?
Do we?
So,
is there something in here about someone willing to donate?
Yes, that's called a grant.
There is.
That's naming rights.
Yeah, if they
naming
rights, if
they
donate a
substantial amount. They're going to do a different policy, they said, on that.
Okay.
So did we agree we're going to take out the time frame, or what was...
Yeah.
Well, I think John mentioned pulling out the word deceased altogether. I don't know if that's going to be problematic in the future, because, you know, hey, I want to name a park after John for being on the Parks Advisory Board. I don't know if that's going to fly, you know, because there could be a million deceased out there. So.
But it would have to be approved, so, I mean... Right.
It would have to be approved.
I mean, there'd be a process, like, so if they can say we're going to name after John, this board says, oh, no, we're not, then it stops there. Right? Yeah. The board goes, yeah, it's a great idea, and it goes
and
to the board.
And then the says, oh, no way.
No, if it's not going to happen, then it's not going to happen.
Yeah, I think there. If you remove that, I don't think there's going to be any penalty.
Though I do like what Jennifer was mentioning, that there is something about full transparency about someone's life. If you're going to name a park after somebody, you don't want to, you know, you can name a bad individual, right? Someone that we all know that initially, you know, that we, you know, they were a public servant, but then, like you're saying, you know, they embezzled money or did something, and then it would become a stain and kind of a laughing stock. So I think to protect, because we're talking about multi-generational, right? Where names don't generally change quickly, and so we're talking something that's beyond us, beyond our lives, right? So, you know, if you're honored, it's like one of those things where it's an honor to be, you know, have something named after you, right?
It's a legacy. Establish a legacy.
Right, yeah.
So, Sherry, you didn't mention that might be because of the emotions or to let that
you
period pass.
No, it passes away, and
so
they wanted it to have a cooling period.
But you have some input on the reason for that particular aspect.
Yeah, I think if it's used to name a park or project after an individual, then it's not going to be petty thing. It's going to be agreed on by everybody. And I think there are people that are very deserving of that. And I'll give one example of this. Certainly would be Kelly.
Absolutely.
With all that he's done and as long as he's been involved and as active as he's been, he certainly deserves it.
Yeah. And so you think waiting 5 years after he passes is a good idea or not?
No, I don't think so. I don't think that's necessary.
I know this language addresses the name of parks, and so rather than a component of the parks, that's the primary purpose. I'm thinking maybe we should just remove
the
five-year period.
Yeah, just remove the word
or reduce
only.
It.
And just say, you know, recommend that some consideration be given to commemorative naming, blah, blah, blah. But if you remove the word only there, so that the 3 years is fine and meets standards, because to me, when you write a policy or a rule, we shouldn't be looking at something that we know that we're going to make exceptions to all the time.
Take out the restrictions.
So if we pull the word only.
I think a lot of the safety stops are in the process itself.
Okay.
And it says you're to consider it, so.
Yeah, we can consider it.
Consider it.
But it shouldn't be as a restriction.
Okay, all right. So we'll scratch that. Any other recommendations or any changes, alterations? And this has largely been untouched as far as the original policy, so we just pulled out the Vancouver Clark Parks and Recreation and stuck in the Clark County Parks. And so
move to...
I have a question about that. Do we, I scanned for it and I don't see it. Do we have anywhere in here that says how long
the names stay?
Yeah, I'm wondering, like someone comes in and they want to rename the park and everyone is excited about it and they rename it and then is there a length of time that they say they have to or they won't or they will? Or
the only time I think it would be renamed is if there was a big public push to rename it. Okay. Otherwise, it's going to stay that name until, you know, some public action.
It's not so easy that so many people go, I'm going to change that. Yeah,
right.
I can see where it would be difficult, but yeah.
No, and that's it comes by very rarely. A lot of times, and I've noticed when we're building our Metropolitan Parks District parks, at the time that we built them, because we'd give them a placeholder name, if you will, it was based on the name of the person who sold it to us temporarily, or it was just named geographically, and then once the park was built, then it got its permanent name. And so I've seen that happen a lot of times, because we've got plans with one name, and the park is actually a different name. So.
And I could see a point of something. but then if somebody passed away, if they had had a huge role in the lay, then it made it become a person.
So that would be an instance where I could see reading. Right. But not taking one person and putting it in another. Yeah. That would be, yeah. Right. But you might want to consider the fact that if you named it after a person, you might want the latitude to be able at some point in time to name it after a community. That would be the opposite of it. Mm-hmm.
Well, in the case with Breton Canyon Park, that's where we're going to actually go out to the public and seek names. And we'll probably present that in the reflector and suggest names. And then once we get that collection of names, you know, and I'll definitely have Gail involved with us, but then we'll make our decisions, get it down to a group of names, and then we get it down to the one, and then we pass it to the board for the final approval.
Yeah, and I do like the way that you specifically addressed the public input portion in Section 7. I thought you did a really good job of covering that.
There again, it's pretty much verbatim as to what it was.
Oh, okay.
I'll take credit.
I think reviewing and pilfering verbiage is always good.
Oh, sure.
It's either credit or blame. Which one?
That's right.
So, Bill, are you looking for?
We kind of see this way.
You know what? We do have some modifications to make. I'd like to actually make those changes and pass them by your eyes one more time.
That would be wonderful.
Okay, and then we'll email that out to you, and it'll probably be our next meeting when we can finalize this. Does that sound appropriate?
Yeah. In the interim, is there a process then that we can provide? Our public to be able to start proceeding with this and preemptively.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, I don't. You know,
she has a copy of. Do you have a copy of what that is?
I have a copy.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Right. Fantastic. Just trying to think of not holding anything back or slowing things down.
And I promise, Gail, we'd start looking at this in this month in October as far as getting the renaming going. So.
Great.
Okay.
Why do we have the initials for everything?
The memorial plaque policy.
The Navy.
That's our second policy that we wanted to take a look at. And again, this is a policy that has been in place with Vancouver Clark Parks. And so the one thing that we did do, and we've got the Parks Foundation on here as well, because Sherry has been very involved with our bench program, benches and tables dedication program. And we also are looking at introducing pavers. Just like you see right around this building right here at Luke Jensen, you see all these pavers? Well, those are all engravable, and you can buy that paver for, I believe it's $100. It's actually ran through the ball club that's here. They're the ones that are actually in charge of it. And I know out at Philida Park, and I think the Philida Neighborhood Association takes care of those bricks that are out there. So I don't believe that we have actually established a brick paver as far as Clark County themselves. And so I definitely want to introduce that. And in fact, I don't know if I brought that up with this group, but with the pavers, it's a much cheaper way to have a memorial for somebody rather than paying the $1,500 to adopt a bench, $2,500 to put a bench in. The pavers would be somewhere in the neighborhood of $100 to $150, which is much more affordable. And I'd like to actually start putting those into our parks as they're being built. And in fact, Scott Brantley, who's here with us today, I asked him if we could introduce those out at Dogwood Park, and they're putting them in. Yeah, so I think we're getting about 200 pavers out there. So thank you, Scott. I appreciate that.
I also appreciate that they're permeable pavement installation.
Yeah.
Right.
So if installed properly, you probably can talk to the Clean Water Commission, but if you install properly, then it becomes pervious pavement, not impervious.
Right.
So
right.
One, you won't have to pay more for your water. I don't know if we pay ourselves, but you know, we'll pay less in our stormwater fee, and we'll.
I just want to we took those force concrete, so we were taking
great.
Concrete.
Okay. Great.
So, what led to that was at Dogwood Park, we had about three neighbors approach us so far wanting to have a memorial of some sort in that park. And so we thought this would be the easiest approach to making that happen. Instead of trying to plant trees or do something different outside of what most people would consider unaffordable is the benches and the table. So this is another option. And so With that, I don't know if we've actually put this in here, Sherry, about the pavers. I don't think so. So this is going to be another document that I'll have to modify before. But I wanted to take a look. And I think we do have some also some other a couple other changes, but I just wanted to get this in front of you so you can take a look at it.
And those are the ones in yellow for you?
Yeah, and I know that Sherry was real concerned about managing that program, and I think we can try to manage that kind of collectively, if you will. So maintaining the database, that's a big order.
And you have a database of the donors, but maintaining a database of the pictures and where they all are, what we do have for us to try to do. But we've done it before with the department, so definitely something we can work together once we get the system up and running.
Okay. So would you be willing to share that responsibility with us?
Okay.
So once we get that database up and running, we can both look at it and run it collectively.
And what we could do is go backwards and get all of the ones who've already been adopted into your database.
Right.
So that we've got that information.
Okay. So we'll tweak that a little bit and get it finalized. Okay. So I think we'll defer action on this until our next meeting as well. So if you see anything that's glaring on this that you'd like to see added or changed, please let us know, and then we can make our final adjustments prior to our next Parks Advisory Board meeting, and we'll get it approved.
And you did say you were already going to add the paper section, right?
Yes, yeah. I'm going to do that. I have not had a chance to do that.
Okay.
I've had too many other things going on, so my apology.
You're also going to change that 3.2 from the City of Vancouver. What's next?
Okay, next on the list.
Yeah, Bill, real quick, is there any sunset clause in here somewhere so that you're not required to maintain a paver in perpetuity?
We're not required to maintain it.
4.6 says we do not have the responsibility to repair, replace, or vandalize lost or stolen donated memorial.
Good enough.
Joe, on 6.5.
Yes.
I'm sorry, I didn't see that. So it all looks really great until you get down to the $250 administrative fee.
Mm-hmm.
You don't just always take $250, so it would depend on the price of the feature.
Okay.
So if it's a brick and $100, you then only take 10.
So 10%, basically a percentage, like 10%.
Much, yeah, but for the benches, the most we ever do is 250.
250.
We can talk about that.
I think we can actually add a fee for the brick for the pavers. So 10% or $10 or whatever.
And then the rest of it's right. Well, and then it says any monies remaining from the donation will be held by the Park Foundation to cover administrative costs. Those go in New York. They go into the county fund after everything's paid for. Then it goes into the county fund, and you guys determine how you want it. So it's not. It makes it sound like it's our administrative cost. It's not.
Oh, right. It does. I thought maybe that.
No, yeah, we thought you were.
Yeah, that's how we make our money.
That last vacation you took.
Sneak that little.
Okay. We'll address
yeah,
that.
Yeah. So no, any money remaining after all of that, then you have a county bench fund.
Wherever she's going.
And so then the same thing with the future maintenance fee. That's not for all features.
Right. Okay.
So we can work on that generally.
Thanks for bringing it
up. Sorry, I missed that completely. You were going through it.
Okay.
So the administrative fee is a county administrative fee. It's not a...
Well, it's not... So when we just talked about the 10%, that's the administrative fee for the Parks Foundation.
Okay.
But then anything left over is to be used at the county's discretion. So generally, like for in the benches, the money that's all left over from those, a lot of times if it's on the Salmon Creek Trail and the Salmon Creek Trail needs some work, then they have the ability to take that money. It's their money.
Yeah.
To use however they want. So.
A lot of times that money just sits there, and if we need to replace boards or anything on that bench, that's what we use it for. So we've talked to Sherry in the past and said, hey, can you give us about 6 bench packages, you know, to replace
and
some boards
on?
Yeah. Absolutely not.
Okay. The next item here is the wind-up agreement between the City of Vancouver and Clark County. and that is a transfer agreement of unfinished business from the dissolution of the interlocal agreement that we had effective December 31st of 13. This document here was drafted by Bronson Potter, City of Vancouver, and working in conjunction with our attorney, Chris Horn, to try to get this wrapped up. What was left on the table of unfinished business, of course, is our PIP funds, which we desperately need. The city is still in possession of $12 million of our PIP funds, and we need to get those in hand by the end of this year, because we have started the construction of two parks, and that money is essentially being borrowed right now until we get PIP funds to actually pay for those.
So what's
and it's also
up?
Holding up. What's the holdup? This agreement right here. And since the beginning of the year, there's been a lot of things that have, with the dissolution of the interlocal, trying to wrap up all the unfinished business has been very difficult for the city. The city took care of a concurrency issue in PIF District 4 and had to refund several thousands of dollars up to a lot of different homeowners, because that money was not spent in time, and that took them months to accomplish. So that was part of the holdup. Another item that was on the list is they actually did an assessment across of all the properties that the city owns, and there was a lot of properties that were never de-transferred during previous annexations. I mean, we're talking about back in the 90s, 2000s, and so those properties that are in the bowels of the city are still Clark County owned. So there's several properties that's on the Appendix B, I believe, of this document, or A, actually, A.
Any idea
so,
how much more is coming?
What's that?
Any idea how much more is coming to add to that figure?
To the PIF dollars?
Yeah.
Right now it's the 12. Well, as of January 1 of this year, the county's been collecting the PIF dollars and not shipping it over to the city. So we've been adding quite a bit of PIF dollars that are coming in from the different districts. But the city still has all the original dollars from past years, so amounting to a little over $12 million. And so it's holding us up. But particularly in some of these PIP districts where we actually need that money right now, we don't have enough money to cover some of those costs.
Is that going to place us in jeopardy of meeting our time frame that those dollars need to be spent?
Our earliest concurrency is PIP District 10, which is going to be February 16th of 2016.
Okay.
And then right after that, we've got about two other districts that are getting really close.
So this agreement that we're looking at now, this has been worked out by both of them, both parties?
We're currently working on it right now. Both attorneys are talking. They're kind of working out the details. Staff and behind the scenes, meaning myself, Julie Hannon, who's the director of Vancouver Parks, Monica Pepperville, Christine Smith of the City of Vancouver, she's in charge of the PIF dollars, are all in agreement that this is a good-looking document. So it's just a matter of the two attorneys wrapping it up, and so we can get this taken care of. If you look at Exhibit A of this document, these are the properties that have been long overdue for getting the deeds transferred over. The properties that are crossed out are the more recent properties that were added onto this list. We decided to pull them all off, including the Schaefer property, because we did not want any squabbling over the properties themselves to tie up this this timeline. Particularly the R.E. Schaefer property. I've talked about this with this group at both our first and second meeting. And for the Schaefer property, you want to pull that up, Jeremy? I can run you through this real quickly.
The picture of RV, the first kind of proposal. Want to pull that one up?
You're talking this one, right?
Yeah.
The Schaefer property kind of proposal. Yeah.
No.
One right above that.
Just pull for it.
Yeah, the one that he sent out was that email.
Okay, can I scroll on a little bit? Okay, so the Schaefer property, that is just on 54th Street, just kind of northwest of Vancouver Mall. When the city first approached us with this, they wanted to give us the rest of their 5th District 7 city acquisition dollars, which amounted to $750,000. Go ahead and scroll up a little bit higher. What we did is we came back with a counter proposal. The property value was at $1.886 million, and we came back with a counter proposal wanting $1,093,000 or $1,093,880 for it. And go ahead and scroll up to the second attachment there. And this is between Juliana and myself.
This is Mary Girl.
Yeah. So this is her email coming back to me that she accepted the offer. So we're getting our fair market value, appraised value, which we have 15% of that original purchase in on that. And so we're getting that fair market value back out. The appraised value was $1.08 million.
Sweet.
So they're really anxious to move on this because of the relocation of their waterworks park. And so they have a grant conversion that they're pushing up against right now. And so we pulled this off of this this wind-up agreement so that we can handle that on a sales and purchase agreement separately. So I was hoping that we could have some more solid information as to where our attorneys are at on this right now. I would suspect that by next week we should have a pretty solid idea of where we're at with this wind-up agreement. And so,
do you know if there's any particular sticking points in it, or is it just making
a lot of money?
Really, the one thing that Chris brought up is the let's see. I don't think he really had too many things that he was concerned about. The whole harmless aspect of this, as of January 1 of this year, you know, basically the city is responsible for their share. The county is responsible for their share. Our attorney said that, hey, if the city's hanging on to our money right now, shouldn't they still be responsible until we actually get it? He's referring to the TIF dollars. They're just sitting there in perpetuity. I think that, not perpetuity, but they're sitting there. They're fairly well protected. The only thing that we were concerned about is if we got into concurrency, that we'd be responsible for it when we don't even have access to the money. We're not even close to concurrency, not until 2016, so I don't see too much of a problem with it. So let's just hope that we can, and there's a lot of folks in behind pushing to get this done. So our intent is to definitely get our hands on TIF dollars by the end of this year. We don't want to go into the next year and still be looking at trying to wind up our business with the city of Vancouver. So that's in a nutshell, that's where we're at. And so I don't need any action on that. I just want to give you a heads up. Real quickly, I know we're kind of running behind schedule just a little bit, but of course we have our workshop next Wednesday, October 15th, from 9:30 to 10:00. To focus specifically on the comprehensive parks plan, basically our mission and goals and actions. And so I hope that we've gotten all the documents to you so we can get up to a really good, strong start. I think before that meeting, and I know we're kind of breaking away from our intention, but if we could just finalize our mission statement for the for our Parks Advisory Board first thing, hopefully just spend a few minutes, and then we'll jump into the comprehensive parks plan.
Can I get a show of hands of who's going to make it to that workshop?
I'm hoping I can.
I'm hoping.
I don't know if I'm then.
Well, just so that we can plan, could you let me know if you're not going to?
Okay.
And I can assume that you will?
Yeah, assume that I will then.
Yes. Yes. No. Sherry, no. Candace, yes. Greg, yes. Jennifer, yes. John?
Yep. I'll do my best, maybe.
So I'm slow, and so I'm always seem like I'm one topic behind, so I'm sorry for that. But with the purchase of the Waterworks Exchange, or what was the name of the park, we had talked about how we were going to spend that money right away in an adjacent park. Is that still something that's happening with
when we get our funds, those were originally acquisition funds from PIF. Both county and city, and I'm hoping that
We can utilize those funds for not just acquisition, but for development. At the beginning of March of this year, we combined our PIF funds, our acquisition and development funds, as of right now, are combined. So they're not separate anymore. I wish that would have happened years ago, because it kind of bottlenecks us when it comes to development. However, when we do receive these funds, I think the original intent is that they have to be used for acquisition. But I'm hoping that if it comes into our PIF fund, where those funds are consolidated, we might be able to use those for development. That's what I'm hoping for.
Okay, and so at one point we talked about that in this district here.
Yes.
In 5, and then it is the exchange of this
Shepherd here. Yep.
Is that going to be unencumbered funds then from the 5th district into the 7th so we can use those that way, or is it?
No, Waterworks is within the city of Gatos.
The exchange with the city. Does that mess up anything related to the receiving funds, and do we have to use those funds in that 5th district?
You will have to use them in the 5th district 7.
You have to go to
7.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. And right now we've got Covey Meadows. That's one of our 35 MPD parks. That's called our district parks. It's in District 7. So is Keller Parks.
Okay.
And so those two parks could actually be built if we have the funding to do that.
Okay.
That's what I'd like to use this funds for.
Okay.
So that,
I know we kind of talked about that a couple of meetings ago, so I'm sorry that I just didn't have my head wrapped around it.
Right. And I'm strongly hoping that we can use those for development funds so we can build those two MPD. That's called the Parks District Parks. Okay. Let's see. So just you can see this reminder to bring all your books with you, all your information that we've sent to you, and then of course if there's anything else that we need to send to you, we'll do that probably on Monday prior
and
to
we're
the meeting.
Right this
way. Yep, right here.
You talking about these books? Bring these books with us, or
yeah. I would. Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Yes, that'd be great. Okay, moving on. So. Steve Owen is here with us. He's one of our volunteers, and he'd like to give a presentation on trail counts.
And I don't know if you noticed, the commitment to get the agenda to us for that work session is in your packet from the today.
Thanks for your time today. My name is Steve Owen. I'm a Trail County volunteer, and I've been involved with this program since June of 2013. I share your enthusiasm for promoting the use of parks and recreation. My enthusiasm goes back to the Eagle Scout project I did in Seattle, Washington, Discovery Park. Built about 250 feet of trail. And I remember very vividly the impact that project had. I'm here today because I share that enthusiasm of what parks can do for a community. I'm involved in county. And I started out thinking, that doesn't sound too exciting, but I'm a kind of a technology-oriented person. I'm an engineer. And it turns out what I've done over the last year with the trail counting program has been really fulfilling. I want to tell you, spend some time with you today, and tell you what I've been working on. So, next slide, please. So, what are the objectives? What are we trying to do here? We want to know what's going on right now with trails. We can find that out using our infrared trail counting data. We also want to know, in some ways, how can we use this data to tell us what's going to go on in the future. Okay, we can look forward a little bit. We can also provide data to assist with parks and recreation planning. Sounds like this body is concerned with parks and recreation planning. So there's a connection point. To provide data to assist the development of grant applications. This has been used to I think, pretty good effect in Whipple Creek. There's a community organization up there who is working on in the local Creek area. They're plugged in. You were able to use some of this data to provide them where they can use that in grant applications. How effective and useful this can be. Wow, grant application with hard data to show this is how many people use this park. Please help us develop this resource. Please help us with et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So data is useful. Data is just numbers with character. Just numbers worth care. We're going to be talking a little bit more about how we actually use the data, what we can do with it, how you can use it later on in the presentation. So we do manual trail counting. There's two types. There's manual, there's infrared counters, basically, that we're talking about here. I'm mostly involved with the infrared counters, but I wanted to mention briefly the manual trail counting that goes on. There's pluses and minuses with both these methods. Very simple. Pencil and paper are required. Volunteers lined up with their clipboards. And not a lot of training required. They show up, very simple, record a person on a bike, a person walking, a person jogging. Provides accurate and comprehensive data on trail usage and classifies the user. Is it a deer? Is it a person? Is it a dog? Is it someone on a bike? Covers a few days a year, does not capture variations over time. It's a snapshot. Requires several volunteers at multiple locations, and it's a good opportunity to engage the public with what's going on in our parks. Infrared trail camera. That's what I'm involved in. You have some upfront investment. You have to have devices. You have to have a sensor. You have to have a way to store the data. Then you have to have a way to take that data and transfer it to something like this that is meaningful and useful. You have to have some way to connect it to a computer. So there's an upfront investment. Not a lot, but there is upfront investment. That investment has already been made. There's some training required. Jeremy trained me. Started out June 2013, took me around all the site, and he had the training on how to use this equipment. It's discreet. It does not classify the trail user. When an infrared sensor is tripped, you don't know if it's a deer, a person, a dog, you don't know what it is, but it does make a count. So it provides continuous visible data throughout the year. It's continuous. Every day, every hour, every day, the counts are summed up and provided in a data stream. It's continuous. Number two, it's visible. It goes on the Traffic's DataNet website. Parks Department has access to that website. They can see this data when I upload it over time. So this is very useful. You can see seasonal fluctuations. You can see all sorts of interesting anomalies with what's going on in the parks. We'll talk more about that. It does require some maintenance, and that's what I do. That's part of what I do when I go and download the information, is we're maintaining these counters as well. So this is where we're at. Whipple Creek, two locations. The most recent locations that where we expanded to. There's a counter at the north entry and the south entry. Salmon Creek, one counter near the softball field. Burnt Ridge Creek, there's actually two counters there near Divine Avenue, right across from the high school. Handwick location for the Moulton Falls Trail Park. We did have a counter up there that was removed because of some vandalizing issues. Future locations, we'll talk more about this at the end of the presentation, but these are potential future locations. I have actually scouted the Frenchman's Bar Park location, and I have looked at, using some other resources, potential locations in Black Hills Park and Captain Park Park commercial. So more about those locations later. And so this is where we're at. Feel free to stop at any time if you have any questions.
When it says animals, does it get, is there a weight point that'll flip it, like will a chipmunk, something small like that running by, do it, or is it just a larger animal? I'm just curious.
Good question.
Yeah, so there's a distance standoff. So after 25 feet, it's not going to count anything. Mm-hmm. And there are small enough animals that would get under the sensor that it would miss. So it's only going to count the larger animals, basically.
Okay.
Yeah. And does that count for wind?
Does it account for wind?
Yeah, because you've got bushes, trees moving, you've got all sorts of stuff.
Yes. Okay. Wind does have an effect, and we'll all talk about that when we talk about anomalies. Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah, walkers, runners, bicyclists, and animals. We will count a person sitting in a truck driving by the trail. I have, in fact, seen this when I did a calibration exercise in Santa Cruz. They are not 100% accurate. There are anomalies you have to account for that can be accounted for. So two people walking side by side, this sensor is going to pick up one count. Two people side by side, so only count the one count, one hit. Also, somebody's walking down a trail and they're walking back, it's going to count twice. You have to take that into account.
Well, wouldn't that be accurate though? Because I could go out a different way instead.
That's true. So every trail is different. Entry points are to be considered where you place a counter. Is it a loop? Is it a trail along a greenway with multiple entry points, like Salmon Creek? Some of these places have obvious destination return points. Some of them do not. So if you decide you want to calibrate your counter, you have to be very careful. And you have to put some thought into how to use that calibration to take in those, to take that into account. Yes, absolutely. So yeah, we can calibrate and account for those anomalies. So the wind thing. So if you have a bush across the path that will heat up in sunlight, and we have in fact seen this, try to move sensors around to eliminate the possibility. Those bushes, those leaves, they will heat up, the wind will kick up, it'll sway in the wind, and it'll make a count. And that will be an erroneous count. Site selection is important, so we look at those sorts of things. So counter placement, we're looking at visibility, viability, accessibility, maintainability. A lot of abilities. So this is kind of the start of the knowledge base of what's going on here. I didn't read through the traffic's information. I didn't read the user's manual. I have to, over time, kind of think about this and decide exactly what I'm trying to do here where I put a sensor and how I wanted to think about it, what's important and what is not. So we have to take into account what the sensor is actually seeing across the trail. What is it actually seeing? What is the aperture going to see? Is it going to see bushes across the trail? Is it going to see a pond? Is it going to see a road with cars passing by? We're certainly concerned about that. Infrared viability, we want the sensor to be somehow shaded. We can insert it into the pocket of a post and create some shade, but we found the best success where it is in an area where there's trees around it, natural vegetation, providing shade on this sensor, so direct sunlight will not hit it. Accessibility, maintainability. I want to be able to access the sensor and do whatever I need to do in a fairly short period of time. And these are very portable and small. There are sometimes when I want to actually connect my laptop to those counters and do some real measurements, i.e. when I do a calibration exercise. So maintainability is important to me. So here's a location of some sensors in your park system. This is the south entrance to Whipple Creek. This is the day we were installing the counter. And you can see this, the width of the path here, a lot of horses coming up and down this path. We've got a high use location compared to Sand Creek, compared to Burbridge Creek, other road hazards there. But you can see the vegetation across here. This vegetation is not a problem. I thought it would be, but I was limited on location here. It's not a problem because it's pretty much mostly in the shade, so it doesn't heat up, and because of the wind in this area, it doesn't sway back and forth and cause any problems. So I've seen very, very few anomalies going on here. This location, we can pick up the Skyview High School track team running up and down that trail downtown because I found a couple of spikes. What's going on here? 100 hits. In an hour? Yep, tracking. Burbridge Creek.
Can they be there? That's okay. Is it
right? Yes, of course.
Yeah, okay. I'm like, so crap, we were talking
about
that.
You look at that, you see spikes, and you start asking questions. And so, yeah, we'll talk more about the anomalies because they are interesting. It takes some study.
If you have any questions, let us know. I have a lot of kids down there.
3 o'clock in the morning. 100.
I'm
kidding. I heard a deer passing by. Yes. Burbridge Creek here. So this location, pretty open on the other side, clear aperture across the trail. And this is the location of Whipple Creek on the north entrance to Whipple Creek. We inserted that sign in the winter months. And facing right across the trail. The trail's hard to see, but facing across that trail, and the minimum standoff is reached before you reach the, I think there's, I don't know what sort of an orchard it is across there. we have, is it raspberries? There's a standoff before you hit that vegetation. So this has been a pretty accurate location for putting the sensor. Okay, next slide. So, like I said, maintenance is required. We have batteries needed to provide a way to store the data to activate the infrared sensor. We also have batteries in the dock that I connect up to when I download the information and put it in my computer. So a couple times a year, or at least once a year, I should say, we're out replacing batteries. Winter does take a toll. This is, when you go to the traffics.net website, this is what the encounter sites actually look like. You can see some gaps in here, and we'll talk more about that. This is the mine, Burbridge Creek, gaps in the data. Some anomalies showing up there. So we need to make sure that the counters are working, right? We're downloading this data, we're looking at it. And we're checking to make sure the batteries are lasting. Next slide. So analysis. So the number 14 doesn't mean very much to me in any stretch of the imagination. What does the number 14 mean? It doesn't mean anything to me other than it occurs between 13 and 15. It starts to mean something when you say between the hours of 7 p.m. and 8 p.m. at the south entrance of Little Creek on a Saturday, the counter counted 14 times. That means something. These tools let me put some characteristics on that data. And it becomes real data. And it's continuous and it's visible. That's the only way data is useful for us. It's in a continuous format and it's visible. So when we look at data, this is a weekly total report, and we see these spikes like this, we look at that data and we try to find out what might be the cause of that. And then we've already mentioned one of the so-called anomalies was when the track team decides to use the Little Creek Park as a place to practice. And I also found out that there was a turkey trot or turkey run up at Salmon Creek, are you familiar with this? In November, that spiked my count. And so I'm looking at the data through the roof here. And I started to look at some of the notices in the Columbian and realized, oh, okay, there was a real event going on here, and I had no idea. So that count stayed, and it's in the data. And so we did find some gaps. We do have problems with the counters. That in Burbridge Creek, we're trying to figure out why the sensor is giving us some anomalies. It's not associated right now, it looks like, with vegetation. We don't know exactly what's going on with the sensor, so I put another additional temporary sensor out on that trail to find out what's going on there. So there's lots of ways we can slice and dice the data, daily, weekly. We can show different sorts of patterns, and we can also download it raw into an Excel spreadsheet and show it any way we want. So I sanitize the data before I put it in. I try to remove all those anomalies that might cause any confusion if the data to whoever might be using the data. Next slide. So calibration. I have calibrated one of the counters before. We wanted to answer some questions. When I'm up at Salmon Creek, this is looking down the Salmon Creek Trail, about 50 yards from the parking lot. You'll see the sign, sensor inside the post pointing across the trail. And we decided we wanted to do some calibration. So over a 1 hour period, the counter measured 77 indications. And I'm sitting there with my clipboard and I'm counting out people walking by back and forth. And I'm also recording how many people are walking side by side. Sometimes two people, sometimes three people walking side by side. And I count 103. So the counter 77, I record 103, that will give me an adjustment factor. And you can kind of imagine how that adjustment factor might be different on Wednesday as it would be on a Saturday. So that's how that adjustment factor could use. There's also a setting in the data, the standard data analysis package, where you can just take the count and you can divide it by two for those trails that truly have people that walk to a destination and come back. When you're pretty much sure that that's happening, you can just take the data as you input it, and it will just divide it by two and show it. Okay. Future county sites. This is a site I scouted on Frenchman Tomorrow. So this is kind of a point-to-point trail, multiple entry points on both sides. But over here, we would be looking at dedicated trail users. So this is a potential site for the next counter. This is a good aperture at this location, north of the canal, and over sloping grass on the other side. So that's a potential site. Captain William Clark Park, I haven't visited this site yet, but I'm just looking at the map and seeing where we might have a good location for a crown, for a counter when we decide to put one out there. We do have two or three counters that aren't being used right now, so these are just potential locations to give us a better idea of who is using these in a continuous format, who is using these cards on a regular basis. And then slide. And this is Round Lake. So again, this is a not so much a point-to-point destination. This is a loop. A smaller loop in here. Several, many of you have probably been there. Lots of people up here. When you get to a certain point on this trail, you're going to have a dedicated trail user. Well, just put a counter there. And what's the best place to put that? Should be having it looking out over the lake on the other way. Where's the vegetation? To be determined. To be determined with further study. So I want to summarize here. So we provide useful information. There's a difference between numbers and data. Trail counting program includes both manual and incorrect counting methods. We do require periodic maintenance for the counters to keep them operating, to make sure the information is good, to make sure to eliminate all the anomalies or looking at the data. And it's being long-term managed by a collaborative effort. Parks personnel and volunteers are collaborating to manage this program. And we're forward-looking. So our work is not done. We've identified sites to put trail counters to use the rest of the counters. Like I said, we own the capital, we own the tools. Why not use them? And so we're going to decide, you know, how that expands. When we decide to do that, the counters are going to be used to where. Probably get an update on that at some point. Does anybody have any questions for me?
How are you deciding which trails
to count?
How are you deciding which trails to count?
Well, this is pretty much that list I showed you is pretty much the trails that are basically that we're cognizant of. And so that's pretty much what's left that don't have to count.
The initial trail counters were installed was based on the heavily used trails. So we started out at three and built up to where we have 7-8 counters now.
Yeah.
So you pretty much have an idea of the entire system then how much.
Yeah. Yeah.
What do you do with the information?
With the information? Like Steve said, what grant we use for grants.
Okay.
And to
justify funding.
Get a good idea how many we use for various things as far as maintenance, if there's certain trails that need to repair, I can justify by
okay.
We'll be providing a summary of trail use information at the next month's board meeting. Karen's asked me to provide some of that information that's coming from these resources that I spoke of. And so you'll be getting a report next month.
Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Interesting.
This is pertinent because it will actually be part of the Comprehensive Parks Plan. So, the regional trail system, we need those counts to show for meeting our standards. All right. Looks like it's me again here, huh? Alcohol sales, consumption, and parks. So, First of all, I just want to say thank you so much for your feedback on your thoughts. And I don't have the luxury of time to wait until the next meeting to get your feedback, because we sent the kind of a poll out to all of you, and I needed an answer back essentially the next day because I was meeting with the board. I mean, some of the times they bring things up on Monday and they want an answer by Wednesday, and it's that quick. And so I really do appreciate all your responses back. And so the responses that I did get back were largely favorable as to allowing controlled alcohol sales in parks and serving as well. Of course, there's going to be some pretty strict pretty steep restrictions when it comes to allowing that. Of course, we have to follow state law, and Sherry was very helpful in letting us know that anybody who does actually apply for a permit, it has to be a nonprofit, to sell alcohol. And so we're currently working on adding language to code, and we are currently opening up park code right now to make some modifications. And so with that, we will be addressing all the rules pertaining to alcohol, you know, sales and serving within our parks. And so, I think that's really about it. Once I get close, you do have the original code in your books unchanged. That's the 9.05. And when we do finalize that, I'll bring that to we'll email it out to you so you can see all the changes that we made. And make a recommendation to approve code as amended, and then we'll take that back to the board. That's actually going to be a hearing because it's code. We're changing law. Okay, with that, we got Tim Freeburn here, and I don't know if Jesse Mayhem's here, if he came in or not, but to give a presentation on the disc golf course at Frenchman's Bar.
This is usually run about $15 a piece. You can play with one. I played with like 20, but that's not necessary at all. Go ahead and go to the next slide, Jeremy. This shows the relative growth rate, the chart on the right over here, of disc golf courses. In the United States, this only goes to 2011. As you can see, it's basically since the first course was built in California in 1975, as it picked up in the 90s and in the 2000s, it's basically almost growing at an exponential rate right now. It is one of the fastest recreational sport in America right now, growing. The number of courses and the number of players are both growing at rates around 10% a year. So that's a lot of disc golf courses being built every year. Clark County currently has zero. To that end, we also, the course that we're proposing is a pretty significant design as far as golf courses go. It'd be challenging and long, but still user-friendly for amateur players and more advanced players too. I feel like we've missed out kind of on a big opportunity last year. This year was the world's disc golf professional championship was held in Portland this year. There's five different disc golf courses around the region that were used, and they brought in a lot of professional players, a lot of followers of the game, and a lot of revenue to the Portland area last year through that. So that's definitely something else that a golf course could bring to the area. Go ahead, Jeremy.
Bud, did you have a question about raising your
hand? Did you have a question, Bud?
No? All right. Well, that's pretty small print. So there are a lot of benefits to the community through disc golf. This is a study that was done by a gentleman named Jason, how do you pronounce that last name? Sinislawshi. He was a doctorate student in the School of Parks, Recreation, and Tourism at West Virginia University, and he did a study, his doctorate was specifically on disc golf and the benefits of disc golf in the community. So I thought that was pretty cool. His major bullet points, which are here, I'm not going to be too thorough in this because it's kind of a lot of stuff, but it has a lot of economic benefits, like I just mentioned, talking about the tournaments and bringing money into the economy. It's also very low cost of construction to initially build one, and pretty low maintenance costs in the grand scheme of things, keeping the lawn mowed and stuff like that. Increases community health, provides a low impact, safe means for all age groups and genders to get out and play an outdoor sport, involves a lot of mental strategy, environmental, especially in this area, if you guys know the area of the park that, the east side of the park closest to the road, the large fields north of the main area of the park.
Do you have a question?
Yes, sir.
What's the planned distance covered for this project?
The planned distance covered?
Yeah, how many yards?
In acres? I don't know how many. I don't know the exact acres of that area. So right now, we'll talk about this more later on one of the other slides, but there's the area that we're mowing right now, that we're maintaining to keep within the fire marshal's code, is about 42 acres. And the disc golf course used most of that area. It doesn't mean we have to maintain all of that area.
42 acres?
Yeah, that property north of. Maybe you're familiar with Christmas Park.
How many people can still use it? Yeah.
I'm just thinking that's big.
It is big. It's a big area. The disc golf course isn't using all of it. All I'm saying is the area that it's going to kind of be in that general area. What we're mowing right now on that property is about 42 acres. So we're paying $60 per acre for somebody to go out and mow that right now. And we're getting zero use out of it. So it's a property that has. The disc golf course will be increasing the value of the large piece of property.
Is it all flat?
It is relatively flat. Some of it goes over towards the cottonwood forested area, closer to the river, where there's a dike there. But yeah, that property for the most part is pretty flat. It has
not as challenging then if it's all flat.
It's
make it longer.
It provides a large space, so there's a lot of things that you can do with that. And we can also, we'll talk about that in a little bit, but we're going to kind of stake off some areas, inbounds and out of bounds. There's some natural swales in that area that collect water in the wintertime, so those areas can be used as natural corridors and stuff like in boundaries. Yes, sir.
What is it? Is it a par 3, par 4?
A standard disc golf course is a par 3 every hole. The one that I'm going to propose here is has a couple of par 4s and even a par 5. They're just a lot longer than a standard hole. More challenging. Yes, sir. Oh, no? Okay, sorry. I thought you had a question. We go back to that real quick, Jeremy. There's a few more things. This is an important one for me, is the safety thing. That area of the park, you know, that gets passed through by vagrants and other people that we don't particularly want in the park. They camp in the forest over there. This golf has been shown to be a major deterrent because you bring in a large crowd of people on a regular basis, kind of from hole to the next hole to the next hole, and have a huge deterrent on activity that you don't want in that part of the park. It also provides a, there's not a lot of schools like this park, but this provides an opportunity to educate kids about physical fitness and their sports and tournaments and stuff like that. We already talked about that earlier. So this is the proposed layout here. You guys are familiar with the main entrance of the park here, the caretaker's house, and the north bathroom is here. And this is a large field with some trees in it. This is also a large field with some trees in it. There's really nothing else there. And so that's the proposed area. You can see when I talk about the 42 acres that we're mowing right now is basically all of this area that's grass, and it's not being used for anything. There is a trail that runs through here that you guys are probably familiar with. But other than that, there's really nothing there. So this is, you're talking about par 3 holes. This is the hole layout that I'm proposing. There's a couple of par 4s and a couple of par 5s, but other than that, mostly par 3s, just a standard length disc golf hole, basically. I have layouts done for all 18 holes. I'm not going to spend a lot of time analyzing every single one of them. I don't think we really need to do that, but this is the general idea. The parking lot is here, the main entrance is over there, the feed booth. You guys are all familiar with this corridor here. So there would be some sort of path coming from the parking area by the caretaker's house, a kiosk here with a map, a box to collect donation money for people that want to donate to the disc golf course, and that would go in a separate fund specifically for the disc golf course to do annual maintenance projects if we need to put down some gravel or some barbers or something like that to for impacted areas. The areas along the side here are already mowed. All the areas that you see in green would be areas that would need to be maintained more regularly than what we're the rough mowing that we're doing out there right now. So that those are the areas that you would be considered an additional expense because we'll have to mow them more than twice a year to keep the course playable. All the areas in red are out of bounds. The ones that I have marked off are areas that collect water in the wintertime. They're kind of natural storm water collection areas. So we want to try and kind of protect those areas. This would be the tee pad, all of the blue ones, and the basket would be down here in the red.
So for clarity,
yes.
How far is it from the parking lot to the actual first hole?
Yeah, okay, that didn't quite fit in the frame, but the parking lot is basically right here. Okay. It's really just past these trees. There's a little strip of grass. The bathroom is right here. The parking lot is right here. The caretaker's house is right here. So it's really not that far. If I had to throw a number out there, it's probably 250 or 300 feet, about the length of a football field, maybe, from the main parking lot there to the first hole. Go ahead, Jeremy.
My son plays that.
So there's 17 more of these. You can see that some of them use this natural swale area of water collections as a natural hazard, like I talked about before, all of this area would be out of bounds. This isn't exact, but you can see that there would be some contour and valleying stuff that we use stakes to mark this area from inbounds to out of bounds, which is, just makes the course more challenging. So you have to keep it in the green area, basically, to be considered inbounds. Just like regular ball golf, when you hit it off into the woods, you drop, you know, drop the ball, take a stroke. go ahead, Jeremy. You can flip through these pretty quickly. You can see on a couple of them here, I've pointed out an alternate location. It's also a good idea on a disc golf course to have alternate locations, because there's a lot of impact around the areas where the players are teeing off from, because they all kind of have to converge in that one area to make their putt and launch the next hole. So there's some impact to the soil and stuff around that area. So having alternate locations to move those around to is a very minimal cost up front. You have to put another concrete base in the ground. But those baskets are removable. So if you have alternate areas, when one area gets too heavily impacted, you can move it to the other area and let that area recover. Go ahead, Jeremy. So there's a couple of these that are in the forest here, throw in or out of the forest. There's a nice corridor through the cottonwoods on this one. It's a really big pear tree right there that's really awesome if anybody's looking for some. You go back one. Here's another one where you can see there's a real natural water collection area here, all the way up into these trees. So utilizing that area, we don't mow this right now because we can't. It's wet most of the year. So using that as a natural border or boundary to demarcate inbounds from out of bounds and make the course more challenging. Same there.
Tim, on some of your longer par five holes, one thing I've noticed in other courses is it's kind of hard to know where the hole is. Where the basket is.
The basket is.
Are you putting in a type of direction finding or weight finding?
Well, I don't think there's going to be any. It's kind of an additional expense to make course maps per se, but the kiosk at the beginning would certainly have a map of the course. There are a few of these that would be more challenging than others, but like she was saying, it's very flat out there. So the ones that are par fives, you can see them. One of them is actually raised from where the tee pad is, and the other one's just a really, really long ways away. So unless the grass got really long, we started having problems with blackberries in the field or something. Yeah, I don't know. Like, visibility isn't really a big issue in this area.
Do you mow a walking strip between, or no?
Yeah, I'll talk about that later. Go to the next one, Jerry. So like here, the mower can mow here and get to here without passing through here. So preferably there'd be like a line of sight kind of mow that takes you, says, hey, this is the direction that the hole's going. And you can drive off the front and get to the next area that needs to mow. And then mow an area, go to the next lap. From that hole to that hole. So there's a natural path. I mean, if he's going to drive there anyway, he may as well mow it out. And that would go for all of this. So, I guess I should mention here, some of these holes, the ones in the forest particularly, will require it's not that tough of a word, the removal of some underbrush and some of the understory in the forested area. I've tried to make the design so that basically no trees of any significant size would have to be removed. Some, maybe a couple of tiny ones or the branches just to, so you have a good path. Some branches, there's some black area on this hole, understory stuff, snail barrier, some other stuff like that, but nothing too significant, nothing to do with the environment or the habitat of the area too significantly.
In Portland Public Schools, they've used goats to clear their blackberries at their office and at their back very successfully. So if we need an environmentally way to clear some of the area, there are shepherds that you can get under contract. They stay, sleep on the site for a week or what have you, and then have them remove that for you. Yeah, I can get you someone at public
Portland Public is using, and it's also a lot of schools that are trying to, that were building near sustainable or environmentally sensitive areas. This just probably is around some of those. Another way that they're going in a non-invasive way to clear them.
Yeah, I would certainly not advocate for using any kind of motorized or electrical equipment in some of these areas. And that's another thing that I'll talk about, building the course and like using volunteer power to do that. There's a huge discrepancy that most people don't really know about. And we're very close to each other, and there's a lot of associations. I've been working with two guys that couldn't make it here today, but Josh is a representative of Stumptown Disc Golf, which is the biggest disc golf association in the Portland metro area. Steve Carson, who used to sit on the board of Stumptown, and now has his own company, his own disc golf promotions. They both helped me a lot with the design work and stuff like that, and the layout of the course. And will also be very big proponents for me when it comes to doing fundraising and getting funds to put in the rest of the course and raising volunteer power to do the clearing and the brushing of the understory and installing the baskets and pouring concrete and all the other things that need to be done to get it installed. Mm-hmm. Go ahead, Jeremy. So we talked about a bunch of this already. We have a lot more slides. The one important thing here is that we just kind of talked about this, and it might be a good idea just as funding becomes available to do this in two phases, so that we kind of have a north phase and a south phase of the two halves of the field. There's 9 holes on one and 9 holes on the other. So that'll be something we could definitely do. The mow areas will be staked off. I talked about that. All fences and roads and other obstacles will be out of bounds. The wetland areas will be out of bounds. And we can mark those as a sensitive habitat just to try and keep people out of them. They're just full canary, canary reed grass right now, which is an invasive species anyway. So I'm not too worried about it. Next slide.
Excuse me, I didn't quite catch that last bit because that is an area that I always worry about when we put activities into areas that are sensitive.
I'm not necessarily say it was sensitive. They're basically just stormwater collection areas, low-lying areas.
So there's no real habitat or?
It's a monoculture of reed canary grass, or canary reed grass, excuse me, which is an invasive species here.
Okay.
So if it gets trodden on, or you've seen like say,
well, it looks a lot like wetland, is you know, yeah. But I'm not an expert, so
yeah, they're narrow areas, and I'll talk about this a little bit later. There's two that will need to be crossed to get from one part of the bowl to the next hole, and those areas I would suggest putting in a small footbridge or something, you know, this high from the ground and dozen feet long or something like that, and just across that area to reduce the impact, or so that you don't have to walk through water in the wintertime because it will just tend to fill up with water.
Where are you looking for the funding to come from? It's great English.
I will get to that, and okay. You can easily move a minute. There's a couple of slides down here. We'll talk about that. So the county's responsibility is where the money for the county will need to be spent is the regular mowing, of course. And I'll talk more about that later. Several waste receptacles for the course, and those will need to be emptied on a regular basis, so something has to be done. And then a park staff member to just assist with the building of the course and work with the volunteers to make sure that we're doing what the county approves to be being done. It's meeting right now. For a little while, anyway. Next slide. So this is a typical TPAT. I just wanted to show a shot of this. This is at Blue Lake Regional Park, which is on the other side of the Columbia River in Fairview. This is a park that was built about a year and a half, maybe 2 years ago now. They basically did the same thing to the park that already existed, mowed out some areas, got volunteers and funding from local companies. I'll just talk about that now. Basically, the way that I want to fund this is through something of like an adopt-a-hole program. a whole sponsorship program. I get local companies like Next Adventure and some Top Disc Golf that I already mentioned, and other local businesses to put up $500 a hole. And that pays for the concrete, the basket, the any signage that we want to put up there, and anything else involved in the cost of the hole and the process of developing the hole, building the hole, running the concrete. Manpower will come strictly from volunteer groups.
Okay. So I'm sorry, I'm lost there. $500 a hole to do all of that? Because I'm just thinking of the couple of holes out there at Abrams Park. And because $500 a hole would be $9,000 for all of them.
Sure.
And it was almost $10,000, wasn't it?
What you asked us for, I believe, $8,000.
Yeah. And that was just to add a couple of holes.
It was closer to $10,000. They were putting the whole thing.
Okay.
But I think it was $8,000.
An eight hole.
Yeah.
So I guess the cost wise, you know, it just, I think that'd be great if it can be done, but yeah. I was wondering how realistic the 500 was.
It's pretty close.
Are you aware that those companies already pretty much all sponsor Leverage Park?
Yeah. I that's what I said. Steve, who I've been working with pretty closely, is always supporting me very much on this. He was the main proponent, I would say. And was sitting on the board of Stumptown Disc Golf at the time for having that course put in. He did most of the design work.
At Leverage?
Yeah, at Leverage Park.
Oh, yeah. And yeah. He did that through the Parks Foundation.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You know, you probably, Steve Carson.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Sure you know him. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So, he's with me on this.
So, I'm going to ask you a couple, or one question. If you get this funding, people are going to be donating it. What will you run it through? So that they can get it on the street. Great.
Okay. Yeah, set up a separate account specifically for
the
Disc Golf course.
Yeah,
that's fine. Yeah. Yes.
And do you think that they would renew then every year? Like, kind of like Steve's done?
Hopefully. Yeah, that would be the ultimate
then you could build
plan. Yeah. At a lesser rate, obviously. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to try and charge them $500 a year. I mean, maintenance on the course is not going to cost as much as installing the course.
Except
the
first for that
time.
First time.
Yeah.
And there are, I mean, I know that there's Clark County Park, but there is a disc golf course at Leverage and in Ridgefield and at Paradise Point.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Paradise Point has a monster.
I mean, I think it's a great idea, but when you say there's none in Clark County, I'm like, yes, there are.
Yeah. Clark County Park
not
is
ours.
Not operating.
Yeah,
that's what I
mean.
There's a private one at one of the churches over here. There's like eight holes. Yeah, the other two that you mentioned.
But Leverage is a perfect example of getting the element out of the park, because that's what that disc golf did. It was wonderful.
Yeah, it's not perfect, but it's helped a lot. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So, question. What is the so if you went to like local businesses and said, hey, look, you know, Big Five or Five Guys Burgers, you know, would you be up for sponsoring a hole or 12? Would you do that? I mean, and then they would channel money through you.
They write the check to the Parks Foundation, and then we would set up a special account under Clark County Parks that says Frenchman's Bar Disc Golf. And that money's 100% restricted. We don't touch it without Bill's approval.
Is there a lot of that, just from business side, I would imagine that a lot of businesses would like to promote have some indication that they
will.
That would be the signage.
Yeah.
Would there be signage on that hole that's brought to you by?
And that's what they do.
Every hole will have a hole specific signage. They'll have a map of the hole where you're standing and where the basket is. Mm-hmm. You know, some general little layout of the hole.
Each hole would have a map.
Every single hole will have an individual one. Yeah, it'll say hole 18 is 542 yards and it's a par 4, or you know, that's what the par is, and then the bottom is this whole sponsor of
five.
Sure.
So to bring it down to what do you need from us? approval to start this project?
Yeah, that's what I need. Yeah.
That's what you need.
Yes.
I had to go out there a lot, and in the summertime, it's hard to find a place to park.
It is. We talked about that too. There's a couple of ideas for that, I guess. I don't know, you want to speak to that a little bit?
Yeah, there's an area that to west. Can you go back to that slide that shows the entire park?
Can you?
He's just having to go back.
I know. But we need to stop at the bartender.
Okay.
This
is so there's the right here. This is actually an overflow parking lot right in here. So we have a cable gate. We've used this in years past, but we haven't used it in the recent years. These parking lots are fairly limited down here. And there's about a 3-acre overflow parking lot down south, and that usually addresses this area of the park. If we needed to, we could actually open this area up, just drop the cable gate, and it becomes overflow. It's channelized right here. So we talked about that as a potential for overflow parking.
You're just way ahead of me. I thought I was so smart.
So you want this commission to give you permission to proceed with the project, but it would have to be with the understanding that it would be completed with private funding, not park funds.
That's what I'm asking for.
What's the annual maintenance on that?
I'd like to.
What's the annual maintenance to add this to our...
So go up one. All right, so this is mowing. All I want you to focus on right here is the highlighted. This is all like acreage and everything, all the calculations, whatever. This is the acreage of the golf course, those green mow areas, the fairways. Basically, it is 12.3 acres. What we're mowing right now is 42.6 acres. Mm-hmm. That comes out to be, for right now, what we're paying is $5,118 and some change. Just to keep the fire marshal happy, basically.
Mm-hmm.
The proposed difference is this would have to still be mowed minus the 12 acres, so that comes about 30 acres. That's where that number comes from. Plus the 12 acres of the golf course that I'm proposing will get mowed 12 times in a year. That's twice a month during the 6 growing months of the year, starting roughly in April through September.
And that would be the
just the fairways.
The money you want us to spend or to approve, right?
Yeah. So we started here.
Excuse me, now we're here.
So we went from about $5,100 to about $12,500. That is the majority of the increase in maintenance costs from having nothing there to having a disc golf course there.
Bill, you guys have gone through this, I assume?
We've talked about it, yes. And of course, you know, we do know it's going to add to maintenance. The one thing that we're really hoping for is that the disco is so popular all over the place that, you know, Tim mentioned that we're going to have a donation box there as well as trying to find core sponsors. I hope that we can get enough money coming in just from folks who are playing and also the tournaments that come in, that we can actually get enough money coming into the Parks Foundation to support all the maintenance for this new site.
If I make a motion, do I include this in it? Maintenance in it?
Yeah.
Do I?
Yeah.
What about when you're gone? When is Steve going to take over getting sponsorships each year? It'll be kind of part of his...
My internship only goes through December, right? But I'm not going to just walk away from this when my internship is over. This has been a project that I've been working on all year.
And so you live here?
Right? Yeah,
oh, okay.
I do. I live in Isabel. Yeah, so I'm not going anywhere.
Okay, so we can hold you to that.
Just want
to
make sure.
Rest of your life.
It's not like
you want to make the name after you.
I would like to make a motion that we approve the disc golf course as presented and recommend to the commissioners that the additional maintenance funding be approved also.
The development of the
community. Oh, I'm sorry, yes. And that this be done with private funding.
The building of the course be done.
Thank you. There you go. Be developed with private funding.
Second.
Does
that work? Did you get it?
I'm scribbling real quick.
I know you're. I'm sorry.
This is all as presented.
We've tried to play the one at Paradise Cove, but it's clear up under the freeway bridge.
Can I ask for clarity on and the additional maintenance funding be approved?
We recommend approval by the commissioners for that additional expense. We have to do it that way, right? We can't authorize expending those funds.
To commissioners. Okay. So we've got a motion to approve the disc golf course at Frenchman's Bar as presented to be developed with private funding only, but recommend to commissioners that additional maintenance funding be approved.
Is that okay?
Does that sound correct?
Does that work for you, or do you want me to put the maintenance thing in?
The maintenance, we're kind of hoping that we can get the maintenance taken care of with private funding.
Well, if you get it covered, that's fine, but if not,
you've got approval to go ahead with it, basically.
Okay.
Is there a second on that?
Second.
Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstained? Motion carries.
Good job.
Barbara,
good job.
I didn't even ask. Do we have a quorum today?
I didn't hear you.
Do we have a quorum today?
Yes, we did. Yes, we did. Great presentation. Greg left.
I didn't count.
Oh, no, I counted.
We're non-voting.
Yeah, no, I counted. We have Marcia, me, Adam, Steven, and Greg.
Six.
John.
And Todd. Yeah,
five. Five or seven.
Okay. I thought about it because I'm like, well, we don't vote, so it's quiet over here.
The only voting member who is not here today is Kelly.
Okay.
No, that's the first thing we did. If we hadn't had a quorum, we would not have proceeded.
Oh, what's next?
Moving right along.
We are really running out of time. So, really quickly, I don't think we're going to be able to get to the online shelter reservations because we just don't have the time to talk about that. The next thing on the list is the Cougar Creek Woods agreement. And just to talk briefly about this, this is a project that Dr. Malata Allen has been pursuing along with the Philadelphia Neighborhood Association for quite some time regarding the construction of the community park components at Cougar Creek Woods. And so Malata and several members of the Florida Neighborhood Association and myself met with Commissioner Madore to talk about moving forward with them, basically developing some of the characteristics of a community park. And so with that, we've been working with Malata recently and trying to work with get a type 2 permit going, and this is under
who's
the.
Who's going to pick up the cost on that type 2 permit?
What's that?
Oh, I was reading through this. You said that you were in the process of securing it.
So, actually, Malata's working on the permit itself, and who's our gentleman that we're working with, Malata?
I think I need to do some clarification first before I launch that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that this particular agreement we have not really talked about in detail.
No, we have not.
And, of course, this particular agreement, if I was in business, I would say no thank you.
Yeah.
As a nonprofit, I would have to say absolutely not. If you were a bank, I would say this was a serious agreement. So, as far as the board is concerned, the fact that the right to this agreement about this particular document is not the document that we would like to talk about.
Okay. So, just so you know, this agreement.
And that was part of my concern.
This agreement, so you know, and I've talked to Malata about this, is the agreement that we constructed with Vancouver Metro Senior Softball Association for the construction of a ball field up at the Civic Park, as well as Miracle League of Vancouver.
Okay, yeah.
That's basically the format of the agreement that you see before you. And so I took that as a basis and just picked it forward just to get something started. This is extremely rough draft. And I talked to Milana about that. And you can see that there's a lot of question marks in there. There's a lot of things. So
well,
this
I have
is,
lots of questions.
This by no means is anything that's even close to being done. But it is the start of an agreement. So.
Now, the terms that are outlined, it would be probably applicable to the state before we see the property in Kern County. But we're not using the property. We are a lighting owner association, nonprofit, for FRCV, that has been saving and building parks in partnership with Kern County, as well as in partnership with other parks. So this would be like a lease agreement to where we would be responsible for 100% plus costs, plus interest. And for exclusive use of the public, which means that we would not be able to even use it ourselves for one thing. But for another thing, we are not in business. We are a nonprofit organization that is a subdivision of our country. So we're also trying to establish our educational and community quality of life purposes only. So as such, we have no revenue coming in to spend over $300,000 to $500,000 as it would be according to this agreement. However, we did propose, develop the park design as a background to why this came about. We did develop a park design over the last 4 years that had input of about 1,500 stakeholders, including the little guys like this, that are very much anxious to see that park developed. So we had proposed a partnership with Clark County to where we will come up with some funding for some features, and we will adopt certain maintenance features, like the trail features or whatever. But something similar to what the Louisville Creek Park has in agreement, this also needs to be discussed. One of the commissioners had mentioned that since we're not developers, we don't qualify for a fee holiday, yet we don't own the property, Clark County owns the property. And so we have to have agreements with Clark County, as we did with the Palaeta Community Park, as we did with the Sunderberg Crawford Park, as we did with the Raspberry Field Park, that we will provide some funding, will provide some labor, we will provide some support for the park, to minimize the cost. Now, we have also $550,000 coming in February that is part of the RCO or Department of Recreation and Outdoor State program for acquisition of the parks, and that's $555,000. That's not coming to us, it's coming to the county. Excuse me, I waited for so long, I should have drank some water. So, all of the developers who are eligible for fee holidays who are not eligible for, one commissioner had suggested that maybe there should be a fee waiver or tied to permit application. For a tied to application costs, because that's just the application itself and a FRIA and also the permits would cost over $30,000. So one of the things that we were proposing was that we work in partnership with the county to allow this to happen, like we did with the other parks. And of course, the preferred alternative, that's alternative number three that was developed by the 1,500 stakeholders. Alternative number two was developed in conjunction with the Vancouver Clark Parks at that time and was sent to the RCO for 50% reimbursement. So when we're looking at the draft, that was good draft there. The park was purchased with tips and reeds. Yeah, we're asking for reeds, basically. Those tips and reeds came from our neighborhood association stakeholders, because the neighborhood association boundary comes out of the park district on the map. Fee waiver is what we would like to have support for from the advisory board, because that is still owned by the county. It is still going to be held by and controlled by the county. We're only proposing to partner. on
several days. So, Melinda, we can't partner with them and receive the fee holiday as our own entity. We have to do a fee waiver.
Actually, that's one thing that we can address to see if we can get the fee waived.
Because I'm worried about providing a fee waiver. I do think it's the right thing to do, but in terms of this group judging whether this project would be worthy of a fee waiver or not, it's challenging. As a school district, when people come to us and say, we want a fee waiver for the school impact fee, we really just don't get them, because who are we judging that this would receive a fee waiver and that wouldn't? And it gets you into some legalities down the road. And I think that partnering in order to waive the fee, because it is a community park, and this design is absolutely genius. Whoever did this or thought about this in terms of connectivity and safety.
1,500
It's genius. So I like the idea of the waiver, but I'm concerned about granting a fee waiver from.
And I hear you on that, Jennifer. I think that where I think this group comes into play is, I know when I looked at this bill, that I kept looking at the wording, and I thought, to me, I watched over years the way that neighborhoods interact in a partnership type way, and how much has been accomplished by it, and that type of relationship. And when I read through this, and the permits and the fees and the you will do this and you will do that, I thought this discourages that relationship. I really found the verbiage kind of.
Well,
but like
here's the big thing.
Discourage the action.
The one thing that I got to be very clear on this matter is that this park, to move forward, it's got to be predicated upon really not costing the county that much money to operate, because we have the 35 parks that were promised to be built and to be maintained. And right now, as you might know, they're talking about delaying the building of these parks because we're not sure if we have the money to maintain those. So this park is not one of those 35. So
we need to take the parks that were moved to the general fund and put into the park district and move them back to the general fund.
And that's in the decision package in front of the commissioners this year. But that may not happen.
Yeah. But my point is not even with this as a specific thing.
Mm-hmm.
Looking at this, in my mind, it is the. You said that you just did this same one with the Miracle League and such. But really, for me, this is the first time I've been pulled into and seen a copy. And so for me, this is setting a precedence of what those relationships and contracts are going to be like in the future.
Mm-hmm.
It sets an example.
It's basically a design, build, and maintenance contract for the future, yes.
Yeah, and so I'd like to see something that at least verbally or in reality, I'd like to see a one that encourages neighborhoods to step up to the plate and take on the responsibility more.
Mm-hmm.
And when you have to, when it identifies the, like the insurance clause back here, which I know that we talked about.
Still working with our.
Number four back here. And I mean, I get that things have to be legal, but.
Mm-hmm.
There's been a lot accomplished in the past, and there was just something about a lot of the verbiage in here that made me a little uncomfortable.
Well, the problem of it is it's run by an attorney. His job or her job, whoever did it, is to protect the county. Okay? That's their job. So that's what they've tried to do with this document. I think the things that are being required are probably going to have to be required. It might be said differently, but it still has to be done.
Okay, but why would we not partner? Whereas, say for example, the staff is very proficient in the permitting and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Why is that instead put on them, where they're out getting funds? And I'm just trying to understand this. They're soliciting funds to build the park and etc. And what I heard earlier was that just the permitting alone is going to be a stopper. Now this is Clark County paying Clark County.
Yeah.
They've got people that are going to come in and build the trails and put in restrooms and like that. They've already got commitments for that. But they can't even get started because there's $40,000 in permitting. That doesn't make sense to me. It's a, yeah.
Yeah, and Commissioner Medora has stated that if we wanted to pursue a fee waiver, he would look at it, but there's no guarantees on that. But
I also know that he is one who very, very, very strongly supports the
anyone taking an interest from the private sector.
So correct. I think this could be presented.
Yes, and as far as the insurance, we've been talking to risk management about, you know, the necessity of that. And so far, we still have a meeting coming up. And
there has
so,
to be some kind of liability insurance. Are we going to carry it, or are they going to carry it?
Well, that's the question. Okay. Because on the two previous groups that we signed the previous or like contracts with, they're carrying it. So
they do a waiver or something.
But this is, I think, a little different than
this is different. Yeah.
The typical, like, you know, picking up letters.
Yeah. It's different.
Yeah.
Well, the volunteer program is that the one that was that lobbied for the Hoover, the condition that we had finally got. We were so happy when we had two coordinators. We had the one for the city to coordinate all volunteers one in a row. So that was wonderful because that is the.
Acquisition, but we'll find out.
Well, let me see. You know, you get the money from the city, you know, you can
measure this. That's PIF, but this is grant funds that you're talking about.
And this is, well, also the grant money was reimbursed to PIF that was extended from the number 9. So it's replaced with PIF.
Well, still the underlying concern and the predication of this being built is the cost of maintaining it. For, you know, thereafter.
Well, the Landing Association has got $5,000 based on our board that we have to do this. And, but then at the last minute, we get an agreement that is really for some corporations that have deep pockets to provide all these wonderful $300,000, $500,000 for the exclusive benefit of the community. And we have no revenue from that. Yeah. We're not established to do that.
It sounds like there's lots of work left to be done on this agreement before it's brought back.
Yeah, I think so too.
And the agreement technically should be hand in hand with the Type 2 application.
And you said Type 2. Isn't that Type 3 that we're looking at?
Pardon?
Is it Type 2 that you're looking at or Type 3?
Yes. As a planning commissioner, I'm
Okay. All right.
So the other problem we have is you're absolutely right. We made it. There's a commitment been made that has not been fulfilled.
I live
in
Florida.
Yeah.
I'd like to see
Sorensen
then.
I mean, that has to be.
We have the promise to the taxpayers
to that.
And so, in order for this part,
we also need to expend the PIP funds before they expire.
Yes.
Yeah. Regardless of where they went.
Mm-hmm. And so that's the one.
Also part of that RCO that comes back into the PIF fund. Okay, the reason why they put just the card at that time is because the PIFs will just about to expire. When it goes back into the pot, such a time is such a time.
So, yeah, we're already 15 minutes over.
I think this should go.
Move forward. Thanks for the input,
Thank you,
Mona. Beautiful design,
this is really
by the way.
Great idea. I really want to see the development happening on the west side
across the street from that park.
It's got to be a
The park itself, they only be built in that area. Half of the park is wetlands, or if you're going to have a job, critically, or if you're going to have a job.
What else you got?
So did you say we're going to move on with the shelter reservations for next time instead?
Yes, we can talk about that next time.
What about the rowing club?
Boathouse thing.
The rowing club, that's the rowing club came to us. They want to build a boathouse to house their stalls, which are sitting outside all the time.
They just want us to approve allowing them to build it?
Yes, yes.
I make a motion that we approve the building of the boathouse by the rowing club. Really.
A second.
Oh, come on.
The rowing club would own, maintain,
yes,
take care of everything.
100%. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they burnt down, didn't it?
What's that?
Didn't it burn down?
Yeah, the rowing club.
Maybe something happened to it.
Yes.
Okay, do we have a
second?
Second. Call for the
Okay. So it's been moved and seconded that we approve the Vancouver Lake Rowing Club building a new boathouse with them building and maintaining it at their cost. Is that correct, Marcia?
That's perfect.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Yeah. Abstain? Motion carries. Do we want to skip round table this time, or do we have a burning need anywhere around the table?
I have one quick question for you. I heard that some fencing has been removed from some areas that have been fenced off for a long time. Do you know anything about that?
Fencing that's been removed from an area that's
been fenced off? Yeah, or maybe removed. They approved something about removing some fencing in some areas. No? Okay, great.
No, I don't know. Well,
I don't know about that.
I don't think so. I mean, I don't think maintenance has done anything substantial.
It's an area. I think it's an area that belonged to the water and power people. It's been fenced off. It's now they're opening it up and just letting.
Do you know where it's at geographically?
I'll find out for you.
Okay, sure. Yeah, no, I'll be more than happy. Just email me.
I know that they were starting to remove some of the fencing around some of the drain things now.
Well, the only thing that the only fence that was removed lately is at the 149th Street off-leash area. There's a brand new parking lot being constructed, so they moved the face fence off because they had to move it back 80 feet. That's the only thing I know about when it comes to fencing. If you find out, then just give me a shout.
I'm
just okay.
Okay, meeting's adjourned at 3:46.
See you next Wednesday, 9:30.
See you next Wednesday.